Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from this.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. Every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell. The great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. How's it going? It is Friday this morning. It's Fly Jams Friday will be coming up. Yeah, man, Fly Jams Friday. That's coming up. All of our regular Friday features, we will have You Big Dummy. That's where I read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. We'll have Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds kind of dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the date, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Same thing with Nick D Show Spies. Listen to this station 24/7 whenever I am mentioned at all. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Also, Vic's Picks. Vic has been going on a musical journey, educating himself through music, listening to the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone magazine. And after the 3:30 news, we will jump into yet another segment of Vic's Picks. Also, Michael Osaki is going to join us after the 2 o'clock news. Tomorrow is the Topps National Baseball Card Day. So we're going to talk about that. And whenever we have Michael on, obviously, we open up the phone lines. He's an appraiser. He's a sports memorabilia expert, and he can help you out. His website is baseballintheattic.com. He'll be here live in studio after 2. And our phone number is 312-981-7200. After 2 o'clock, if you've got a piece of sports memorabilia, baseball card, any kind of sports memorabilia laying around in a box or something, you're wondering how much it's worth, he can help you out. He's an expert appraiser. So Michael Osaki is going to join us after 2 o'clock. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, Herb Weisbaum is going to join us for his monthly visit. He's our consumer man, consumer reporter for NBC News and KOMO in Seattle. And if you have any questions about consumer-related issues or scammers or any of that kind of stuff, he wants to keep you smart with your money and keep you safe from the scammers. And he gives us all the latest news and will answer any and all of your questions and concerns, again, at 312-981-7200. So Herb Weisbaum will be joining us in just a few minutes. And also, it is Mirai Sweet Corn Day. And so we'll get a visit from the Twin Garden Farms folks. They'll be coming in around 4:30 and giving out those green mesh bags of the greatest sweet corn that you will ever have. It is truly the best corn on the planet. And we're always the first show to get the batch of it. So we're going to come in, and the Twin Garden Farms folks are going to visit us at 4:30. And we will talk about and discuss the great, beautiful Twin Garden Farms Mirai sweet corn, the best corn on the planet. It's there you go. So lots of stuff on the show this morning, on this Friday morning. And so let's say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
I am great.
Good. You're looking forward to getting some Mirai sweet corn?
Yes. This is going to be my first time having a little Mirai sweet corn. It sounds delicious.
Yeah. It's life-changing.
I'm going to rip open that bag. I'm going to bite right into one.
Well, you can. That's how good the corn is. Orion, I remember Orion Samuelson telling me that you could just open up take the ear, peel it back, and bite right into it raw without cooking it or anything like that. And I was like, no, you can't. And I did, and it was delicious.
And if Orion says it, it's the truth.
Absolutely. You don't question Orion Samuelson, for God's sake. That's not something you do. So yeah, the Mirai Sweet Corn, the first batch of that corn comes directly to this show, and we get it, and very excited about it. That's coming up after 4:30. You got plans for the weekend, Tom?
Well, today, a little bit later, I'm going to take my girlfriend to go see The Farewell, which I have seen. But
it's a great movie.
Yeah, I loved it. I know she's going to love it. It's right up her alley. And going to do that. Going to be doing some no-coast activities this weekend.
For your podcast.
Yep, we're going to a very cool thing called Destroy Your Art, which is a thing where people, filmmakers come together. They work on a film. They show it, and then afterwards, they literally set it aflame, never to be seen again.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, they do a different method of destruction every year. So this is the third year. They've always wanted to use fire, so now they're going to torch it.
That's weird.
I know.
So you're going to cover it on your podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Right. We talked to, on the most recent episode, we talked to the two organizers, and their names are Rebecca Fons and Jack C. Newell. And then it's actually this Saturday. It's tomorrow. So we're going to be there. We're going to be taking photos. We're going to be hanging out, seeing what the whole thing is.
All right. Where's it taking place?
It is going to be, you know, I don't have it off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be at kind of an art center and all that kind of stuff. All
right.
We're going to screen it. Everybody's going to hang out, and then we're going to set stuff on fire.
Wow. That's just very strange. All right. I'm very excited about this Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. The more that I read about it, the more that I'm hearing about it, I'm really excited to see this movie.
Same.
The guy who directed it directed The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which is a really creepy and very, very creepy and scary movie. And he also did Troll Hunter, which is this fantastic movie from like about 8 years ago. It's a terrific director. Del Toro co-wrote it. The other two writers wrote the Lego movie. And I'm hearing nothing but good things about it. I'm really excited about it. It was just kind of like, okay, that might be fun. But now I'm actually genuinely excited about this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about The Kitchen because it's Melissa McCarthy, Tiffany Haddish, and, of course, the great Elizabeth Moss. And it's a mob movie set in the 70s. What's not to love?
It's everything you could
ever
want.
So I think it's going to be a fun movie weekend. And my folks, we're going to see both of those together on Saturday. So that should be cool. All right. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Doing great. It's Friday.
It is Friday. You looking forward to sharing your musical knowledge with us
for
Vic's picks a little bit later?
Yeah, definitely. I love talking about it.
It's going to be fun, man. I think this journey
especially
is great.
Albums. Yeah, thank you for letting us, let me on the air and talk about it.
Every Friday we'll do Vic's picks and see how far along you're coming. Hey, I understand we were talking off the air. You're very happy that the Bears are back. I know you're a big Bears fan and a big football fan.
It's a wonderful time of year for me.
Yeah.
And so, it's only preseason, but still, I got to look at some of the new players. Didn't get to watch the whole game, but yeah, man, it just feels good.
Yeah.
It just feels so good to hear.
Football fans, the thing about football, and I'm not the biggest football fan. I mean, I don't follow it very, very, but the thing about football, literally, every game counts.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there's 162 baseball games, and there's like 80-something hockey games.
Yeah.
So my two favorite sports are very long. Like they last months.
To your point, it's and it's so real when the season starts and you're going into the fourth week. Some teams that end up starting 0-3.
Yeah.
They're almost done. It's almost impossible to make it. Some do, but so you're right. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
It's so important every game.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's why it's such an intense season. 16 games, you're in, you're out, you got to do well.
Yeah.
Especially
after last year, there's a lot of I was going to say pressure, but I've heard some interviews in the team, and the players don't look like they are feeling that. They're trying to stay in their game, not what all of us are saying. But the fans, I think, after last year, we have high hopes for what can be this season.
I think nobody expected them to do as well as they did last year.
Until they got Khalil Mack, and then everybody kind of expected
But it was, they did better than anybody expected. It's of course, it was hard to shake how the season ended. I mean, that was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I think we're over that and ready for the new season.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be exciting. So, all right. So what are your plans for the weekend, Vic?
I'm going to watch a movie with Jeannie.
What are you going to go see?
Suspiria.
Oh, that's right. I brought in a copy of Suspiria for you. Because...
Actually, did you know that Entertainment Weekly, on the cover of this DVD, they've actually made a mistake.
On the cover of the DVD?
I pointed it right out immediately. I saw it. Quote, Entertainment Weekly, one of the scariest movies of all time. I've been given to believe this is the scariest movie of all time.
Well, in my opinion, it's the scariest. It's the scariest right. movie I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's not my favorite horror movie. My favorite horror movie is John Carpenter's Halloween. I think there's a difference. But the scariest movie I've ever seen is definitely Suspiria.
I have a feeling 15 minutes into it, Jeannie is going to look at me and go, Nick is insane.
Well, let me say something to you right now.
Okay.
Let me just say something to you right now. And Tom is also a massive fan of Suspiria.
Okay.
Okay? We both love this movie very, very much. Insane director, Italian director, Dario Argento directed it. And it has, and Tom, you can back me on this, as a horror film fanatic as I am, seen hundreds and hundreds, thousands of horror movies over the years. The first 10 minutes of Suspiria is absolutely insane. I mean, you open a movie, a horror movie, with that.
Oh.
There's not a lot where you can go from there, because wow. the first 10 minutes of Suspiria, Tom, am I right?
Yes. Only Dario Argento would have the gusto and the gumption to do something like that, and it works.
I mean, seriously, the first 10 minutes of Suspiria, I've never seen any horror movie ever that opened that way.
So, for me, horror films, I don't go see them very much because they really impact my psyche for a while. So I have nightmares. I get a little spooked from noises or whatever. So I don't watch them. I might watch one a year. So.
Yeah. You're diving in the deep end, Vic. That's all I'm saying.
That's the way I do it.
You're diving in the deep end. And also, in addition to it just being a really terrifying movie, an unbelievable music score.
Oh, wow.
Cool. One of the crazy, and you're going through all this music stuff. You are about to watch a movie that contains one of the greatest scores in film history.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the best horror score of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the music? Italian, or is it?
It's a prog rock band called Goblin.
Okay.
And they compose the music and perform it. They're a prog rock band. I actually went to see Goblin perform the music live as they screened the movie. So they played along with the movie.
Neat.
And it was at the Metro, one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Oh, that is really cool.
So keep that in mind. Unbelievable, crazy score, insane movie, incredibly scary, and beautiful to look at, too. Like, it's got this really beautiful three-strip Technicolor. Like, the color is just so nightmare-like. It's really...
I'm really excited. How long is the movie? 98 minutes.
It's not very long. I can't wait.
But
again, prepare yourself and prepare Jeannie for the first 10 minutes. That's all I'm saying.
And she promises to hold me for the whole
night
after
this. I think you guys are going to be holding each other when you see it. So,
and
anyway,
the dog.
Well, I'm excited to hear what you think of it when we come back from the weekend. All right, cool. That's Vic in the newsroom. Tom's producing. Let's take a break. Our good friend Herb Weisbaum is with us. If you have any consumer concern or related question, or you want to know about scams and all that stuff, we got the consumer news coming up and your questions at 312-981-7200. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday morning. We'll have all of our regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Shows by You Big Dummy, all that. I think I'm going to sneeze. Thank you. So there you go. And that's all coming up. Also, Michael Osaki is going to join us. Tomorrow is Topps National Baseball Card Day. He is an expert, a sports memorabilia expert, and he's an appraiser. And if you've got some stuff around the house, sports memorabilia around the house, or baseball cards, or any of that kind of stuff, anything sports memorabilia related, he can help you out by appraising it, and he'll do that for us a little bit later on. So that's all coming up on the show right now. But we want to get to our first guest, and that is Herb Weisbaum. Herb's a consumer man. He's a consumer reporter for NBC News and KOMO in Seattle. You can see him at consumerman.com. And we have Herb on once a month. He's one of our buddies and one of our favorite guests. And here is Herb. Herb, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
I'm all right, sir. How are you?
Good. Well, listening to your opening bit, I know I only have to be good for the first 10 minutes and have a great score, and it doesn't matter what happens the rest of the
Yeah, no, the rest of the movie is actually great. It's just that I've never seen a horror movie open up with such intensity and insanity. So that's what I was warning. I was warning him a little bit to prepare himself. All right, Herb, tell everybody about you, as we do every month.
Well, as you said, I'm the consumer man. It's my job to look out for you and try to steer you away from the scams and to the good deals and how to save money and be smart. And I do that for NBCNews.com. I write a column a week, which I then post on my website, consumerman.com, to make it real easy for you to find. I also work at a radio station here in Seattle as their consumer reporter. So I'm basically all things consumer.
There you go. And the website is consumerman.com, as we've mentioned.
Right.
All right. Let's start out with... How do you have credit card debt, and you have an article here about skipping lattes. Forget skipping lattes. Focus on areas of spending instead. And you have some advice for people on how they can better use their money.
Yeah, this was an interesting look at the subject. I think we all know that a lot of people in this country have a significant amount of credit card debt. And the folks at creditcards.com decided to look at what people spend money on, discretionary money on, who are in credit card debt as opposed to households that are free of credit card debt. They looked at 9 different discretionary spending categories and to try to find a pattern, because it turns out discretionary spending in many cases is often a significant part of the problem.
Yeah.
So finding where that is a part of the solution. And the average household spends thousands of dollars a year on non-essentials. So here's what they found. They surveyed 2,500 U.S. adults, and they found that those with credit card debt spent more in each of these categories: dining and takeout, clothing and accessories, cell phone service and equipment upgrades, entertainment outside the home, fitness, subscription services, that would be like your Netflix and that kind of stuff,
right,
and personal care and beauty products. And in some of the categories, it was really significant. I was surprised, but the clothing and accessories category, a household in debt spent $1,892, so nearly $1,900, and the household that was not in debt only spent $1,500. That's a pretty sizable difference there.
Yeah.
$300 more on cell phone service than the households that weren't in debt. And the bottom line, according to the folks there, is that people always say you get into credit card debt because of an emergency or because you just can't make ends meet with day-to-day expenses. But looking at what they found, it's that a lot of people have lifestyle creep, as they call it, little extra things like dining out or entertainment or gym memberships that are busting their budget, but they don't really notice it, but it's happening over time.
Yeah.
And you have to look at that kind of stuff, and that's where you've got to cut back. Yes, it would be great to cut back a latte a day to save some money. The trend has been lately in personal finance to do what they call latte shaming. You know, skip that latte a day, and you're all of a sudden your budget's going to be in balance. And,
right,
you know, clearly saving $3 to $6 a day if you have one latte or more could actually help give you some breathing room in your budget. But if you have some sizable debt like this, it's cutting out things like this as opposed to cutting out a latte that's going to make a difference. So one person gave me an example of the Motley Fool. She said, if you spend $20 on a pasta dish at a restaurant, that you can make it $5 for yourself at home. Not a big deal if you do it once in a blue moon. It is something significant if you're doing it 2 or 3 times a week, every single week.
Yeah.
Then there's an area where you could cut back and actually put some wiggle room in your budget. That's the logic here of trying to find ways to cut back.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking to see that the people who are in debt spend more money in every category.
Except for two, with leisure travel, which was a significant difference of people with free of credit card debt felt comfortable of spending about $1,000 more in overall each year in travel, and people in credit card debt spent just a little less than people without debt for a car lease or a loan, possibly because they're having a lower priced vehicle or something like that, or lower car payments. But in seven out of the 9 categories, they actually did spend more, and it adds up to a big chunk of change. And the other thing that I thought was very interesting in this survey is, and it was pointed out to me, is that a lot of people wind up getting in trouble because they're being billed for a service that's automatically billed to your credit card, and many times you don't even stop to think that it's on the bill. A lot of people don't look at their bills, which to me that doesn't make sense, because you need to look at it to look for fraud and make sure mischarges and just see where you're going. But if you're not looking at your bill and you sign up for something, you know, maybe you don't use that account anymore, that music account or that video account or a gym. You join gym, it's billed to your card every month, you're not gone anymore for some reason, but you never stop to look at the charge to see that's, or the clothing subscription one somebody pointed out. You know, get those boxes of clothing or cosmetics month. Those are places where if you're not looking at your bill and you're not stopping and thinking about it, once you sign up and that bill keeps going on and on and on, those are, again, some things where you could actually cut them out and make a sizable difference.
Okay. Well, listen, Herb, hang on. I still want to talk more about this, because you do go into more detail about how you can you know, how can you can cut back on this kind of spending and sure. and talk about, you know, making a budget and stuff like that in order to get out of that debt. Herb, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Herb Weisbaum is with us. He's great. He's the consumer man. Check out consumerman.com. If you have any consumer-related questions or concerns, we're here to help out. He'd love to help you out and keep you from scamming and making smart decisions with your money and all of that consumer-related stuff. So give us a call. The phone lines are open. The text lines are open. And Herb can probably help you out. He will help you out. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. The news is coming up next. And then when we get back after that, we will jump right back into Herb, talk more about consumer issues, and answer your questions right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Here till 5 a.m. It's Friday. All the regular Friday features are coming up. Michael Osaki is going to join us from Baseball in the Attic, and he will appraise your sports memorabilia if you have some. That's after 2. But right now, Herb Weisbaum is with us. He's our consumer man. And talking about consumer issues, let's welcome Herb back. Herb, welcome back.
Herb was talking to you from Seattle. Vic missed a big sports story.
What's the big sports story?
Seahawks won tonight.
Oh, yeah, we normally lead with the Seattle teams here in Chicago. That's normally what we lead with. Boy. All right, Herb, welcome back. Now, we were talking about this piece that you put together based on the creditcards.com survey, and yeah. You also have some advice on how people can cut back on some of this non-essential spending and work on a budget and stuff. What are some of the things that you wrote about and detailed in the story?
Yeah, the key to getting your house in order financially is to know where the money's going, what's coming in and what's going out. And the only way to do that is to have a budget. You know, with what we were talking about before about making some cutbacks in your budget, no one is saying that you cannot ever treat yourself to anything, that you can't go to the movies ever, or you can't dine out ever, or take an exercise class, or even buy that latte every once in a while. But if you are having trouble making ends meet and you're running up a sizable balance on your credit card, you got to figure out where you can make some trimming in that non-essential spending.
Right.
And only 40% of the American households, according to the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, have a budget. And you can't, as I said, know what's happened with your money unless you have one. So you've got to make a budget. And it doesn't have to be a sophisticated spreadsheet or anything complicated. It just has to be, here's where I'm spending my money. If you want to start, the National Foundation for Credit Counseling does have on its website a starter kit to get you help started making a budget. I link that with this story that's on my website, consumerman.com. But track where the money is going, and once you see where it's going, you may be surprised at how much you really are spending on eating out or doing certain things that maybe you could make a cutback. Or you see, I do pay for that gym membership every month, and I'm not going to the gym. Either go to the gym and get healthy or cut the gym membership, one
right,
or the other.
Right.
So that's what, and if you're really, really struggling, and there's some people who making these cuts are what we're talking about, that just isn't going to be enough for them. They've unfortunately gotten themselves so deep into trouble, then you really need to see a nonprofit credit counselor. This is somebody who's going to talk to you, work with you one-on-one. They're going to have no judgment whatsoever about you, what you did to get you in the situation you're in. They're going to try to help get you out of that situation. Forget a lot of the ads you hear, you know, we'll fix your credit overnight, all this stuff. You want one of these nonprofit credit counselors who are looking out for you. The first consultation in most cases is free, and they'll take a look at your spending, they'll set up a budget, they'll set up a plan with you. In some cases, the monthly payment may be nothing depending on your income. Sometimes it's as little as $15 or $20, something like that. They can negotiate with your credit card companies. They can figure out what to do and help you pay off your debt a lot quicker. I've talked to people, and I'm not kidding when I say that have had $50,000 to $80,000 in credit card debt. They walked in and worked out with a credit counselor. You know, the first thing they do, Nick, is cut up your credit card so you can't use them anymore.
Right.
And within 4 years, they had whittled down that debt to zero. And the one couple I'm thinking of, they actually wound up buying a house 4 years later when they had zero credit, yeah, and $50,000, $60,000 worth of credit card debt. So it can be done. It's affordable. It's easy access. And if you're looking for one in your area and you don't know where to start, once again, that website of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, nfcc.org, has a list of local nonprofit credit counselors in the Chicagoland area or wherever else you're listening, and that you can make an appointment, see them, and they really can make a difference in your life. There's no need to suffer. There is help out there. They can help virtually anyone, no matter how serious the problem seems to you. They've seen it all, believe me.
Now, you know, Herb, we talk about this every time we talk about credit card debt and getting out of it. I always throw in my personal story because I got out of it. And as you just said, you can get back. You can get out of it. Sometimes it takes a while. It took me a while. And I had a significant amount of debt, and it was because of, there was no emergency or anything. It was because of these stupid spending, the spending that I would do, on the credit cards, the stuff that you, that this whole piece is about. And I cut that back big time and I got out of debt. And, I'm telling you, it can be done. And also, man, and Herb, we've talked about this before, the feeling of finally being debt free is unbelievable. It's like the a massive weight has been lifted off of your shoulders. It really is, and it can be done. So
yeah, I mean, I've never thankfully been in that situation, but I had a time once where I was juggling money and waiting because a big bill had come in and something I did around the house, and I was waiting for my income, you know, the check to come in and a freelance thing. And I know what that stress was like, and I knew the money was there and I was going to be okay. I can't imagine thinking about what it would be like if I didn't know where the money was and what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And remember, if you're only making like the minimum payment, you're never going to pay the card off.
That's true.
And you're going to be and you're paying, you know, the average interest now, Nick, is 18% across the country. If you're in a bad credit situation, you're probably paying 22 to maybe 29 if you're in a default situation. I mean, that thing just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger unless you proactively say, I need help. I got to do something. And then somebody takes care of it for you.
Okay. Well, go to consumerman.com and definitely read all about that, what we were just talking about. You know, this comes up too, Herb, and it's an interesting. You also have a piece here called "How Young Is Too Young for a Kid to Have a Credit Card." This is a, you know, I mean, now kids have more sophisticated stuff nowadays than anybody. I mean, you know, the phones and things like that didn't exist when I was a kid, obviously. But you know, little kids now have screen time and they have phones, and how quickly will they move on to credit cards?
Well, that was a question that I found fascinating, answered by the 2019 Parents, Kids, and Money survey done by T. Rowe Price. And they found out that 17% of the kids in this country, age 8 to 14 years old, now have a credit card. Wow. And that is up from just 4% in 2012. So a huge jump in this. And as you know, getting a credit card, you can't get one at that age. These young people can't get one themselves, so they have to be made an authorized user on their parents' credit card account. And when I started talking about this story, my editors back in NBC New York and even family and friends I was talking to go, are you kidding me? An 8 or 10-year-old kid having that much spending power in their pocket? They thought it was absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
But I spoke to Stuart Ritter, who's one of the certified financial planners at T. Rowe Price, and he wasn't really surprised, and he certainly wasn't alarmed by the survey findings. His logic is, and other financial planners I spoke to for this story said the same thing, it's all about knowing your son or daughter and preparing them for the responsibility of having a credit card if you believe they're ready for having one. So it's less about how they're going to, you know, not the mechanics of the credit card, but actually having the responsibility of understanding how these cards work and what needs to be done to make it happen. And there are some benefits for having a card at a young age. I mean, several people I talked to told me they thought it was an emergency valve for their kid. For some reason, one mother from here in Seattle, her kid was traveling to San Francisco on a plane by himself to visit a friend, and just wanted him to have some kind of emergency money in case something happened. Didn't want to hand him cash, wanted to have something more significant, and everything worked out just fine in that situation. They trusted their kid. They talked to him about money. Another mother I spoke to, she gave her kids credit cards, three daughters, when they were 13 years old, and she explained to them the rules. She said, this is not magic money. It doesn't come out of nowhere. You buy things with my permission that you're allowed to buy, and if you buy things so I get the bill and I'm not approving it, you're going to pay for it out of your allowance. And she said they screwed up maybe 5% of the time, and when you're young, that's maybe a time to make a mistake. But she said by the time my girls were in college, they all had a good credit history. They were all on their way when they needed to get loans or take a car loan or get an apartment when they got out of college, and it worked out well. I'm sure it doesn't work out well in every case. case. But let me explain the mechanics of how this works.
Sure,
as an authorized
sure.
user. So what you do is you agree that you're going to let your child be on the card. And so they don't get their own card. I mean, they get a physical card with their name on it, but they actually get it's hooked up to your account. So you're the master credit card holder of the account, and you get the copy of the bill, so you see what your child is spending the money on, and you, Nick, are on the hook. So if they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and run up the bill,
right.
you're on the hook to pay for it.
Right, right.
And they could screw up your credit score as well. So the difference is with a cosigner, which a lot of parents do when their kids get older, like in college, for a cosigner, they can actually basically do whatever they want to do, and you're responsible for it. With this one, you could shut them down at any time, and you see what they're doing. So it's got a little more peace of mind built into it that you
right.
know what your child is doing.
Right.
And all the parents I talked to and the experts said, sit down with your child and explain whatever for you is the rules of the road. Like, here's what you can spend this card on. You know, you need to ask me or you don't need to ask me. One parent said, if you know I would pay for that if we were to store, then you can pay for it. If you know I tell you you couldn't have it, you can't pay for it. And then how's it going to be paid for? Are we, the parent, going to pay for that? Or is this going to be a teaching moment? You get an allowance every month. You can't spend more than your allowance, and your allowance will go to pay for whatever you run up on the credit card bill. So if it's used in that sort of way with guidance and explanation, and the parents themselves are responsible with credit, it could be one of those teaching moments where you teach your child how to use credit. As one expert put to me, we live in a world of credit. Your kids are going to use credit sooner or later. You might as well teach them at a young age how to use it responsibly when they can really learn things. And you know, that's one of the logics. Maybe 8's too young, maybe 10's too young, but you know, maybe as when they're teenagers, maybe it's okay. You know, they don't have to wait till they're 18 years old and head off to college or graduate from high school or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, when I was a kid, I had no knowledge of what the value of money was. You know, mm-hmm. I had no idea. So I think one of the positives that you were just talking about was this could teach kids the value of money and what it means to spend money and to have some grasp of that at a young age.
Yeah, especially if you set the rules. Like, here's the deal. You know you're going to get $25 a week on allowance for the chores you do. So that means over the course of the month, let's say you can't spend more than $100. So keep in mind when you're charging these things, and maybe you want to have other money to do something with, you don't want to spend $100 worth. Maybe you want to save it up for something bigger. I mean, there are money concepts that could be taught here if the parent is interactive with their child, keeps track of things, and really, you know, uses this as a teaching lesson to do something like that.
Yeah. Okay, Herb, hang on, all right?
Okay.
Okay, Herb Weisbaum is with us. If you have any consumer-related questions or concerns, you need some help from Herb, he's here. He's the consumer man. The phone lines are open. The text lines are open. Get in here with your question for Herb at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. More with Herb, the consumer man, Weisbaum, after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Michael Osaki is going to join us after the 2 o'clock news. He will be coming in straight from the PPG Paints Green Room. We love the PPG Paints Green Room. Best view in the office area here. I think that room has the best view, the PPG Paints room. Michael Osaki will be here. He's a sports memorabilia expert appraiser. And if you got some stuff laying around that you want to know what it's worth, well, he can help you out with that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number right now, though. We're talking with Herb Weisbaum. He's the consumer man. Check out consumerman.com. He's here to talk about consumer-related stories and to help you out with any concerns or questions that you have consumer-related. And it's 312-981-7200. Herb, welcome back.
I slept in that green room once when I came
yes.
to see you.
Yes, you did.
Nice couch, a very comfortable couch.
It is a very comfortable. It's a very comfortable room in the PPG Paints green room. That's exactly right. When you came down to Chicago, you came over to Chicago to visit with us, and you did.
Yep.
You ended up taking a nap in the PPG Paints green room.
Had my first Lou Malnati's pizza and my first nap in the Pittsburgh Paint, the PPG Paint green room.
Green room,
so.
Exactly. All right, very cool. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We do have a text here. Maybe you can help somebody out. This is Bill. He's
sure.
in L.A.
Oh, hi, Bill.
I just tuned in, so maybe I missed this. Does Herb have a recommendation for how much allowance for a 13-year-old, or whether they should do chores and just or get it without chores? Oh, well, now that's a parenting question more than that. But what do you think, money wise, for a 13-year-old?
I don't have I don't have any kids, so I don't have a number factor. But I had an allowance when I was a kid, and I just thought it was a great way. Rather than the parents just handing you money, which I know so many parents when I see around me do for kids, is to sort of teach the concept that you got to work for money. That doesn't mean you can't, the parent doesn't buy other things for you. But I think the idea of having your own little pile of money and the ability to spend it on some things that you want to, that you don't have to explain to anybody because it's your money. But you sort of learn you learn the value of money, as you were saying, and also maybe the delayed gratification. You know, you learn that, well, if I really want that pair of pants is $50, but I only get $25. A week, you know, if I don't spend anything this week and I take next week's money, I can buy that pair of pants. It's a great way to teach those money concepts. So I'm not a parenting expert, but I think there is something to that. At least it worked for the kids. My generation was because I remember the kids, we all had allowances, and it just built into us some sense of responsibility. And I think that's really important and maybe missing in a lot of kids' lives these days where they just get handed everything.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that teaches them anything, quite frankly.
All right. Well, there you go. Another piece that you wrote here is the latest scam. It's a government imposter scam and getting calls from the Social Security Administration. Tell us about this latest scam.
Yeah, the imposter scam is going to be really big right now, and so what it is in most cases it's a telephone call, and the bad guys pretend to be somebody, and with the U.S. government it works really well. The studies have indicated, and it's borne out by what we see in real life, that people tend to react more when they're frightened than if they're rewarded. So, for instance, there's still plenty of, you know, you just won the $1 million lottery, just give us $100 kind of scams going on. But if someone calls you up and says, I'm calling from the IRS and you're going to be arrested for not paying your taxes, or I'm calling from Social Security and there's a problem with your account and we shut it down, you need to do this in order to get this month's benefits, that, Nick, really gets your attention. I mean, if you're a senior who's living on Social Security, that really gets your attention.
Yeah.
It frightens you. You know, your brain reacts in a fright mode. You, what do I need to do? I've talked to people who fall into these. I just said, what do I need to do? Tell me what to do. Don't turn my Social Security benefits off. So a lot of the scams, the impersonator scams now, have shifted from the IRS, not that they're gone, but they're shifting to Social Security. I think that's because there have been so many warnings about the IRS scam, but it's also because the Social Security one just scares the daylights out of specifically seniors when they're told that there's some problem with their account and they're going to shut it down. And the other thing that sometimes makes these scams so realistic is that they are using information now from the data breaches so that they can pretend to have information on you, like they're calling from the Social Security. So, for instance, they may call and actually give you your Social Security number or the last digits of your Social Security number or know some of that information to actually make it more realistic, because what they're trying to get you to do is to send them money somehow. So, you know, that's you got to be careful of that. There's real simple rules to protect yourself, and it sounds really obvious and simple. Unfortunately, when the phone rings and they say they're going to, you know, cut your benefits off, but here's the rule, real simple. Folks, the federal government does not call you out of the blue, period. End of story. The IRS does not make contact with you via phone call. If there's a problem with your account, they send you a letter. Good old U.S. mail. The Social Security Administration does not call you out of the blue for any reason, period, end of story. If there's some sort of situation, they send you a letter through the mail. So anybody who calls up and tells you they're calling from the IRS or Medicare or Social Security and there's a problem with your account or your account's being shut down or someone's fraudulently using your account or whatever, and you've got to get us information right now, or you've got to pay us money right now, it is a scam. Hang up the phone. And I'm telling you, I talk to smart people, Nick. They fall for these things. A woman in South Carolina is in my story. She gave them $14,000 because They told her she was going to lose her benefits. And, Nick, these guys, I mean, imagine a score. It's one thing to steal a couple $100. If you're going to make $14,000 from somebody, they literally stayed on the cell phone with her while she drove to the bank to take out the money to make sure she did it. It sounds silly to us standing back, but in real time to her, this was scarier than
absolutely,
hell. The guy said, no, I'm going to wait on the phone until we get this thing settled. I'm going with you. You know, take me along with you on the cell phone so they don't let you get off the hook.
Man, these people have no soul, Herb. I mean,
they have no soul. They have no conscience. They have no soul. They'd steal money from their mother. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I've talked to one of these guys who was in one of these boiler rooms. He literally single-handedly stole $1 million. And he basically said, my job is to steal your money, and if you're dumb enough to give it to me, that's your problem. End of quote. That's how he sees the world. So, and the other thing is, Nick, the government's never going to call you out of the blue. They're never going to ask you for private information that they already have or ask you to send money. And seriously, and think about this, folks, the IRS, Social Security, Medicare, they don't take gift cards.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You don't pay the federal government with iTunes gift cards or whatever. And that's what they sometimes get people to do, is to go and get gift cards and then give them the number off the back of the card. The government
that's
does
crazy.
Not. You buy things on the iTunes store with iTunes gift cards, but you don't pay off things to the federal government. So you just got to be really careful. Stop and think. If you're not sure, hang up the phone, call somebody, call your daughter, call your son, call the AARP fraud hotline, call the Better Business Bureau, call Medicare, call Social Security. Everyone will tell you it's not us, it's a fraud. Just stop and think before you do something that's irreversible. Once you give them your number, if you're looking for data like your Social Security number, or once you send them the money or give them that number off the card, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like gone, and there's no way to take it back, and there's no way to undo it once you realize that you've been snookered. So you got to stop and think before you do anything.
Okay, and read this article. It's available on consumerman.com. Again, Herb, tell everybody how they can get your newsletter.
Sure. Just go to consumerman.com, and you will get a pop-up window on the right-hand side. It'll say Get Herb's Free Weekly Newsletter. That's because it's free and usually once a week. And it'll keep you up to date on the stories I'm doing and also some of the other ones I'm doing for my radio station here. So you get a bunch of current consumer information that'll just keep you up to date on all the things that are going around.
All right. And so do that right now and subscribe to the newsletter. It's free.
Hey, can you ask your sports guy a memorabilia thing for me?
Sure.
I'm doing a big charity auction for the animals. You know my love for animals.
Yes.
I got a one-of-a-kind portrait done of Edgar Martinez, our beloved Edgar Martinez, who just got in the Hall of Fame, signed by Edgar that we're signing at the auction. I bet that's worth a few bucks.
Oh, okay. I'll ask him.
And if people are from Chicago want to fly on October 5th, we'll be happy to just say Nick DiGiulio sent me.
There you go. Before we go, we only got a couple of minutes here, but I do want to mention the Capital One breach.
Sure.
Because it was massive. It was absolutely massive. And I happen to have a card in my wallet that says Capital One on it right now, and I was a little concerned.
So do I.
And,
you know, it's believed to be a woman here in Seattle.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Here's the deal. There is so much of our information that has been breached in the data breaches in the last couple of years that you've probably been breached several times, whether you know it or not.
Sure.
All our information is basically floating around out there. So we have to live our lives assuming that the data is out there to protect ourselves. So how do you do that? Number one thing, freeze your credit reports at all three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And that keeps any criminal who gets your information from opening new accounts in your name, which is in most cases what they want to do if they're trying to commit financial fraud. So that stops them from doing it. Do it for the kids in your family. You can now block the accounts, freeze the accounts for the children in your family because they have Social Security numbers as well.
Exactly.
It's free. It does not affect your credit score. And if you want to take the freeze off, so you want to buy something, get a loan, whatever, you do it online, and it's usually off in 30 minutes. So it's become, in the last year, a really simple, easy thing to do, and most people still don't do it. Then keep an eye on your accounts. Look for any problem that might show up, because the sooner you find a suspicious charge, the easier it is to deal with it. Credit card, there's no real thing to worry about because you're using the bank's money. If there is a fraudulent transaction, you contact them, and they take it off your bill.
Right.
Final thing, set up fraud alerts. You can get fraud alerts on your credit card, on your debit card, on some other financial accounts. You go online, look for security alerts. Usually takes you a minute to set them up. So on my card, I have international transaction. I have money taken out of an ATM. I have any transaction. transaction over a certain amount. You can do that on your checking account too, by the way.
Yeah.
This will let you know by text or email in real time what is happening to your financial accounts and can help you spot a problem right away. Those are some of the best things we can do in this world of ours where all of our data is floating around out there.
I couldn't believe that story. Over 100 million people. That's just...
Yeah, we don't know how much you actually put out, but it certainly gives you an indication of, again, how vulnerable these systems are and how supposedly companies that are warned about a problem don't take the steps that are necessary to prevent the problem. It really is getting to be a little bit frustrating that we're giving you our data or whatever and you're not being careful enough with it.
I immediately, when I heard the story, I immediately freaked out because, like I said, I have I have a Capital One card in my wallet right now.
Right. So. You should have called me. You got my number.
Exactly. All right, Herb, always a pleasure, my friend, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thank you, Nick. You be well, okay?
All right, buddy. Take care. We love Herb. Herb Weisbaum. He's a consumer man. Check out consumerman.com and subscribe to his newsletter. All right, we're going to take a break. We got the news. And then after the news, Michael Osaki is going to be with us. He is a vintage baseball card and sports memorabilia expert and appraiser. If you've got some sports memorabilia laying around the house, you're wondering, buddy, but what it's worth, he can help you out at 312-981-7200. News after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m., and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, downtown Chicago. We are here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Coming up in a little bit, after the 3:30 news, we are going to do Vic's Picks, where that'll be the first of our regular Friday features. Vic has been on a musical journey for the past few months, making his way through the top 100 greatest albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And he's going to talk about a couple of albums that he's listened to recently and how he feels about it as he's learning more and more about music. So we'll do that. Then after 4 o'clock, the other regular features will begin. We got You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, Fly Jams Friday will be coming up. And the folks from Twin Garden Farms will be here to bring us our green mesh bags of the Mirai Sweet Corn, which is the best corn in the world. So the corn season has officially begun, and we'll have them come in for that. But right now, we are joined by our old friend Michael Osaki, who is a baseball card sports memorabilia expert and appraiser. His website is baseballintheattic.com, baseballintheattic.com. And he is here. I had to talk about a bunch of things. He was at a sports collectors convention last weekend, which took place right across the street from the Flashback Horror convention that I was at. Tomorrow is Topps National Baseball Card Day, and also he can help you out. If you've got some sports memorabilia laying around the house and you're trying to figure out if it's worth anything, Michael's an appraiser, an expert, and so he can help you out. So call us up right now. The phone lines and the text lines are open with any and all of your questions about sports memorabilia. Hopefully we can help you out. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and welcome back to the show, Michael. How are you?
Thanks, Nick. I'm doing great. How have you been?
I'm all right. I've been good. So we were right across the street from each other last weekend.
I'm surprised I did not bump into you. There was like 30,000 people there.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised I didn't bump. I'm not surprised because I was in the hotel doing things. I didn't leave the hotel for 3 days. I was inside the Crown Plaza Hotel for 3 days.
Did you see the sun?
No. I mean, through windows. Okay. But I had nothing but recirculated air conditioning air for 3 days. And when I stepped outside to go home on Sunday evening, I was like, oh, humidity. I haven't felt that in a while. So, but no, I have a lot of duties at this thing because I'm one of the hosts at the convention. Yeah. So I host panels and Q&As and I introduce movies and I spend a lot of money on in the vendor room and all that cool stuff. But it's a lot of fun. We had a great turnout this year. We had a lot of really great horror celebrities and actors, actresses and stuff like that. So it was very, very cool. But you were across the street. Tell me about the National Sports Collectors Convention.
That convention is all the it's basically every year in August, late July, early August. It changes venues year by year. And over the course of, I think, 5 days, there's 30,000 to 40,000 people. I've been attending the national convention for the past 6 years or so. And
it was at the Donald Stevens Convention Center, right in Rosemont, right there.
Exactly. And I've never seen so much traffic, just people running around. There was so much activity, so much excitement, a lot of high-end sales. It was quite the spectacular. I was talking to a bunch of dealers. They had great weekends. Next year, it's in Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was funny because because a lot of the people who attended the sports the sports collectors convention stayed at our hotel and had no idea what the hell was going on. Like, they came in, they had with their boxes of memorabilia, and they had their cards, and they were just, like, looking around at people who were dressed up like Freddy and Jason and all these people with bloody limbs hanging off of them and costumes. And I think they'd had no idea what was happening because the entire hotel, the Crowne Plaza Hotel, was invaded by horror nerds. So the sports guys, and there weren't that many of them, but a few of the sports guys did stay at our hotel. But, yeah, they were pretty much bewildered by what was I can't tell you the number of times I shared elevators with guys going, what in God's name is happening? but it was pretty fun. So how many people, you know, are a part of this convention?
Well, there's 650 different dealers, and there's a Topps baseball card company is there, a couple of the other card manufacturers. But again, I think 35 to 40,000 people walked through the turnstiles over 5 days. Mm-hmm. It was Wednesday through Sunday. And it really is quite the extravaganza. There's just so much eye candy as it relates to baseball cards, sports memorabilia, autographs, sports collectibles. You name it, it's there. There are probably a few hundred Babe Ruth autographs there. Just a ton of rare pieces, unopened baseball cards from the 1950s.
Wow.
I mean, you could spend 2 or 3 days and not see everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what was your capacity there? What were you doing? What were some of the things that you personally did?
So I had a booth there, and since I'm a certified appraiser, people would stop by my booth, and we talk about potentially getting their items or their collection appraised. A lot of the people I talked to flew in from out of town. People were in from New Jersey, Dallas, Texas, Florida, yeah. California, Nevada. Mm-hmm. So it was good to see them in person. Some of these people I've met or I've talked to online, like on Facebook or Twitter. We'll tweet at each other or we'll comment. But there's something to be said to actually see someone face-to-face and shake their hand and actually kind of understand who they are and have a drink with them.
Oh, okay. All right, so tell everybody about baseballintheattic.com.
Sure. Baseballintheattic.com started back in 2007. And the website is a couple different things. I have a blog on there that I educate people. I do a lot of writing. But also people can fill out a contact form if they have something in their home or their attic and they're just not sure what it is. Sometimes these people purchase these things as a kid and they still have them. Sometimes these items were passed down to them from a prior generation. But whatever it is, it could be anything sports related, all sports, baseball, hockey, soccer, basketball, horse racing, you name it. People can contact me and I'll help them.
Okay, so that's at baseballintheattic.com, and you visit us every once in a while. So Topps National Baseball Card Day is tomorrow. How are you going to celebrate that?
Yep, it's Saturday. It's always on a Saturday in August. And National Baseball Card Day is really good because it brings awareness to the hobby, and there are a lot of sales and promotions at your local card shop. Additionally, this year, a lot of Targets and Walmarts are giving away free baseball card packs. I'm not exactly sure which locations, but you can probably go online somewhere and find out who's giving away free baseball card backs. But this hobby is strong, as I witnessed last weekend in Rosemont. It's growing. It was great to see a lot of youngsters walking around the convention. And National Baseball Card Day, again, is a great way to bring awareness to our hobby.
Well, I was looking at this, at the National Baseball Card Day stadium giveaway. Fans can find free packs of various MLB ballparks in July and August. But the Cubs did it just this past weekend on Saturday. They had the giveaway, and then the Sox did it on the 28th of July. And other MLB ballparks are handing out the Topps National Baseball Card Day sets for cards for free.
That's fantastic. And speaking of the White Sox, did you hear today that the White Sox are going to play the Yankees next year at the Field of Dreams?
At the Field of Dreams, yeah. Yeah. In fact, at tonight's game, after today's game at Guaranteed Rate, they're showing Field of Dreams. So if you go to the game, then you get to hang out afterwards and watch Field of Dreams at Guaranteed Rate. But yeah, that's pretty cool. They're playing in Iowa. That should be fun. That should be a fun game to watch. So, all right, we've got some people who are already calling in.
Oh, great.
And we got some texts coming in. Michael Osaki is with us. He is a sports memorabilia expert. He's also an appraiser. Baseballintheattic.com is his website. We're celebrating Topps National Baseball Card Day tomorrow. And if you've got any sports memorabilia and you're wondering whether it's worth anything, 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. And here's Nick on WGN. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
So I inherited a Santa Anita jersey, and it looks older, and it looks professionally framed in plexiglass. And I was just curious if it was worth anything, and how I'd go about finding out. I mean, is he a hot signature, or I don't want to rip apart the frame and screw up the jersey, you know what I mean? Okay. So what should I do with it?
A Stan Mikita signed jersey, if it is signed.
Is it signed, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, it's signed, and the person that I got it from said he won it from an auction, so, and he's a pretty legit guy. So I was just curious.
All right, so a signed Stan Mikita, vintage Stan Mikita jersey. What are we looking at here?
A couple hundred bucks. However, if it's game used, if he actually wore that jersey, we're talking about a few thousand bucks.
Yeah, so you'd have to find out whether it was actual, you know, whether it was actually used in a game. That would be more, even worth more.
So the best thing to do is take some pictures, because I can look at some of the tags on it, the collar tag, other tags, and determine if that jersey was actually game used or not.
Yeah, so you can take some pictures and contact him through baseballintheattic.com.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
All right, did the Stan Mikita stuff go up since he passed?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Most people think when somebody passes away, the things are going to skyrocket or go crazy.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does, but most of the time, not really. And with the case with Bob Feller, who passed away December of 2010, the value of everything actually went down because he signed millions and millions of autographs over the course of his long career. Mm-hmm. And he was a Hall of Famer, but when he died, people flooded the market to try and sell stuff, and there was not enough demand to catch that supply, and so everything kind of plummeted.
Yeah, it's interesting how that stuff happens, man. Woot in Skokie, all right, said, is there a large market for non-current golf memorabilia? I had a large collection of Chick Evans, one of the greatest amateurs to play, and he was a Rogers Park resident. So golf memorabilia, is that...
Yes, and he said non-current, so I guess that would be vintage.
Chick Evans.
Chick Evans, yeah, there's definitely some value there. And some of the other guys, people could be listening right now, they have Byron Nelson or Jack Nicklaus items signed or unsigned or some golf clubs. But generally speaking, golf doesn't have a ton of value. Baseball is usually king, and golf comes in at the bottom. But depending upon what it is, there is some value.
Okay. All right. Michael, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Michael Osaki is with us. He is a memorabilia expert at sports. Baseballintheattic.com is his website. And we're celebrating tomorrow is Topps National Baseball Card Day. And if you have some sports memorabilia laying around the house and you're curious as to what it's about and how much it might be worth, we would love to hear from you. The phone lines and text lines are open at 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And how's everybody doing this morning? We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is a Friday morning. All of our regular features will begin after the 3:30 news with Vic's Picks. We'll do Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, Fly Jams Friday. And it is Mirai Coin Day, Corn Day today. The folks from Twin Garden Farms will be here with the first batch of the fantastic Mirai sweet corn, which is just delicious. Right now, Michael Osaki is in studio with me, and he can answer your sports memorabilia questions. He is an appraiser. His website is baseballintheattic.com, and we're having him on because of Topps National Baseball Card Day, and also to help you out. If you've got some sports memorabilia and you're wondering what it's worth, Mike can help you out. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, Michael.
Hey, Nick.
All right. 630 area code says, I was wondering how much a Mark McGwire Team USA rookie card would be worth.
Yes, that would definitely be his rookie 1985. It varies on condition as far as the value goes, anywhere from $20 all the way up to $500 or $600 in mint condition.
Oh, all right. Mark the Breadman says, I have a baseball signed by the 1959 White Sox.
The Go-Go White Sox. So. Yeah. It would be important to have Nellie Fox on there. If Nellie Fox is on there, you're talking $300 or $400.
Wow, okay. All right. 1959 White Sox. All right. Nick, I have a quick question for Michael. I am a cousin of Tony and Gammy Granato. And back in the early 90s, he gave me his game worn in the 1988 Olympic with an Olympic white hockey sweater. which I have framed on my wall in my living room. I don't intend to sell, but for appraisal value and insurance reasons, any idea what that might be worth?
Sometimes I have to punt. So right now I just don't know off the top of my head. But if the caller follows up with me maybe in a day or two, I'll have some time to digest and think about it.
All right, Tony and Cammy Granato. So the 1988 hockey sweater from the Olympics. So, all right. Well, 708 area code, that's your question. If you want to contact Michael, that would be the best thing to do. Your email is info@baseballintheattic.com.
Yeah, and people can call me, 312-379-9090 after the show.
Okay, 312-379-9090 if you don't get through. But we have some phone lines open. And if you want to text your questions, got some sports memorabilia that you're wondering about, we'll help you out at 312-981-7200. Here is Joe on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Yeah, I have a Ted Williams autographed baseball bat. It's an upper deck model, and so it's official. I know that.
Okay, that bat would be $700 to $800.
Wow,
oh, that sounds good.
That's Ted Williams.
Thank you.
Ted Williams, man, you can't argue with Ted Williams. All right, Joe, thanks. Autographed bat from Ted Williams. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, over the years, of course, he's been dead for a long time. His son ran a his son is also dead, actually, ran a company in Hernando, Florida. And basically, the company was just giving, having Ted sit down, and the son would give Ted as many items as possible for him to sign. Bats, balls, jerseys. And that's how his son made a six-figure living every year.
Mm, wow. All right. Before we get back to helping some people out, everybody hang on, 312-981-7200. So we've been talking about the trading card fraud stories that have been happening, and the FBI now has issued subpoenas as part of this investigation widening. What do you know about this? What's the latest? And how widespread is the sports card fraud?
So the short answer is right now we don't know how widespread it is. The FBI is doing an investigation to determine how widespread it is. My estimation is it's very small. It's kind of like in most businesses or jobs, you have a bad apple, a scam artist or a shady character who tries to do bad things. And in this particular industry, it's so large that there's maybe a small select handful of people that have been trimming baseball cards. And basically, the reason why people will trim cards is to make it look like it has four sharp corners. If a card has four sharp corners, the value goes way, way, way up. Okay, and what's happening is this guy supposedly was buying cards at an auction, graded cards by a third party. He would break open the case, and he would, let's say there was a crease on there, he would flatten out the crease, maybe he would trim the card a little bit, resubmit it to the same third-party authenticator in hopes of getting a higher grade, and then he would take that card again back from the grader and give it back to that same auction house he bought it from 6 months earlier and make a lot of money. So again, the FBI, like you said, is investigating. There were several subpoenas handed out at the national show last week. I did see them walking around, and we'll find out in the future, I guess.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be somebody trying to take. We just had Herb Weisbaum on talking about scammers and fraud and stuff like that. It's everybody is trying to make a buck illegally, and so it's not surprising that it happens in the sports trading card world.
Yeah, and especially in the last 5, 6, 7 years, some of the prices have really taken off. And so there's definitely been a lot of eyeballs looking at this market and saying, oh, my God, wow, there's a lot of money to be made here. And
yeah.
So, yeah, there's a couple of bad apples. They will be dealt with appropriately, and we'll kind of move on.
Okay. All right. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, it's not a simple question, but Michael understands it. I got a buddy that's putting together a set of 75 Topps minis, everything from very fine to mint, but we both keep getting conflicting results of the value. Can you give me your ballpark or your source?
Okay, so in 75, there were two sets produced, the 75 Topps regular size and what the caller...
No, he's doing the minis.
Exactly, and these are the minis. Now, this set is great because there's a couple key rookie cards, Robin Yount, George Brett, Jim Rice. So those are definitely the key cards in the set. Now, what's the caller's question again?
Well, how much they might be worth.
We have conflicting dollar amounts we keep finding online. I was just wanting to see what your ballpark figure from your sources.
Well, the problem with looking at prices online, especially on eBay, is you have to look at sold listings, sold items. If you just look at something as it is, people are asking the moon. So you really have to click on the sold item button to get a true feel and understanding for what the values are. Now, if you're collecting that entire set, that's 75 Topps Mini in near mint condition, it's going to be several thousands of dollars, but most of the value is going to be in those key rookie cards.
So, yeah, because there's some amazing rookie years that year, my God.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Man, I mean, I heard those names are unbelievable.
Unbelievable names.
Yeah, God, yeah. Jim Rice. I love Jim Rice. Love him. All right, Steve, it's going to be worth a good amount of money, so thanks for the call.
Yeah.
All right, take care. There you go. We got a break here for the news. We got some phone lines open if you want to jump in. Michael Osaki is with us. BaseballInTheAttic.com is the website. He's a sports memorabilia expert. We got some more sports stories to talk about and answering your questions about some of the sports memorabilia you might have and help you out. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. The news is coming up right now. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on 720 WGN, and we're here until 5 a.m. It is Friday. All the regular Friday features will begin at 3:30 with Vic's Picks. Then we've got You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. Fly Jams Friday will start a little bit later this morning because we're going to get a visit from the Twin Garden Farms folks, and they will bring in the first batch of the Mirai Sweet Corn. It's Mirai Sweet Corn time, and it's the best corn you'll ever taste in your life. So we'll get that in here as well. But right now we're talking with Michael Osaki with BaseballInTheAttic.com. He is a vintage baseball card sports memorabilia expert and appraiser. So if you've got anything, you're wondering if it's worth anything, you got some sports memorabilia laying around the house, well, check it out and give us a call or a text. And Michael can help you to tell you what it's worth. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Michael, welcome back.
I think I want to stick around till 5 for the Mirai Sweet Corn.
Yeah, it's the best, man. It's the best corn. It's the best corn of all time. Tom's never had it, and he's going to taste it for the first time this morning.
Look how excited Tom is.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, they always come to our show. We're the first show that gets the Mirai Sweet Corn. Every year they come in and they bring in the sweet corn and we talk about it on the air, and then everybody else at the station gets their sweet corn, but we get it first. That's the same with Punchki Day. When they bring in the Punchkis from Continental Bakery, we're the first show that gets the Punchkis. So that's the thing I was telling Tom. You know, he's still relatively new to working overnight. So Tom, how long have you been? It's March, right? When you started working for
March 25th.
Remember the first day?
Well, yeah, because I literally had to quit all my other jobs.
Yeah, because this is a full-time gig.
Yeah. So, they let me know a week ahead of time. They're like, all right, so you start Monday.
That was the best decision you ever made.
Well, yeah.
I'll never regret it. Ever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's great. But he's been, you know, so he's still getting used to, you never quite get used to working overnights. It takes a few years, actually, before you get used to it. But I was telling him some of the things, the advantages of working this shift is Punchki Day, when we get the Punchkis before everybody else. Mirai Corn Day, that's today, Sweet Corn Day. And, of course, our weekend begins at 5 a.m. Friday.
Oh, that's right.
Most people's weekends begin at 5 p.m. Friday.
Yeah.
We get a 12-hour head start on everybody.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is. Now, granted, we have to go back to work at 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, but that's okay. It all works out. Oh, how about this? Pete McMurray is listening. He was the dude that was on before me.
Okay.
This is not a joke. He says, no joke. Pete McMurray, no joke. Jim McMahon signed jockstrap. I don't want to know how he got it. Pete's a weird dude anyway, but he's got a Jim McMahon signed jockstrap. I mean, is that something that, has anybody ever asked you to appraise a jockstrap?
Yes. You may not remember this because our first show was, I don't know, 9 or 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
The first show, and I still tell people this story, because they ask me all the time. I see a lot of things. Michael, what's one of the like more crazy things that people have asked you to praise? Caller calls in. Michael, I have Joe Garagiola's game used jockstrap. How much is that worth?
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I looked at you, and I didn't know what to say.
Yeah. Well, what do you could say? Jim McMahon signed it. I can understand. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Jim McMahon would sign one of his jock straps. That doesn't seem surprising at all, considering Jim McMahon's personality.
I mean, I definitely don't.
And I'm also not. By the way, I'm also not surprised that Pete has it. That doesn't surprise me either. That Pete McMurray has a jock strap from signed by Jim McMahon. All right, what's the...
Thank God I'm not looking at it or touching it in front of
no,
me.
No. We don't have enough Purell in the building.
So, I mean, it's going to be worth a couple $100, but this is a unique item. I mean, it's basically worth whatever someone's going to pay for it, but I would say a couple $100.
All right, Pete, you can retire on it. There you go. All right, jock strap. Oh, God. All right, let's see. Let's go back to the phones real quick. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right, man. What do you got?
All right, I have a lithograph of Mark Pryor done in the style of Leroy Neiman.
What? Wow.
Yeah. It is autographed. I have a COA, but I do not know who the artist is who painted it.
Oh, and is it signed by Mark Pryor?
Yes, it is, and it's number 5 out of 1,000.
So it's a lithograph that's done in that style. It's signed by Mark. What did he say about it when he signed it? Was he like, "Where did you get this?"
I wasn't there. I won it at a convention.
Oh, I see. Okay, so it's an item that he won at a convention, but it's a lithograph. Well, and it's number 5 of how many, Mike?
1,000 of 1,000,
and it's signed by Mark Pryor. What do you think? That's a unique item, too. We're getting some very unique stuff here.
Very unique.
I do have a COA with it, by the way.
So Mark Pryor obviously was, at the time, everyone thought he was going to be such a great player, a Hall of Famer. Unfortunately, all the injuries he was riddled with really affected
his
career.
I'd rather not discuss it.
But I guess the answer to the question here for the caller, anything Mark Pryor is basically untouchable, whereas there's not much demand for it, unfortunately, because he bombed out.
Yeah.
In fact, I think today he's a minor league pitching coach for the Padres.
Okay.
But he made out like a bandit. He made like $60, $70 million. It was guaranteed money, and he just sucked.
Yeah. Well, he was prone to injury, man. He was prone to injury. Mike, that's not going to be worth a ton, but it's a pretty cool item.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right. Something to throw darts at later. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, by the way, where are you? Where are you, Mike? You sound like you're at a bar.
No, I'm at a gas station.
Oh, you're
right. Getting coffee and stuff for work.
All right. Well, be safe, okay?
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take some Mike calling from a gas station. I thought he was boozing. All right. Here's Dave on WGN. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right. What's
Mike,
up?
How you doing?
Hello.
Hey. I have a signed full-size Wilson football from the whole Bears team that I won at a Monday night game. I was a season ticket holder.
Which Bears team are we talking about?
What year?
1986 Chicago Bears.
The year after.
Yeah, the year after. I think we traded half the team after that.
Is Walter Payton on there?
He's got to be.
No, Walter is not on there.
Oh.
I know Dave Duerson's on there. There's, as athletes do, they kind of just scribble their names, but there are numbers by each name.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. It's maybe a couple $100.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, maybe that's even more than you thought it was going to be worth, Dave.
Yeah, I figured probably somewhere around there.
Okay, cool, man. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. God, man, in 1986, you don't have Walter's signature on there. Wow.
That's the big one.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. And who was the first sports person that you met?
Walter Payton.
Yeah, that's right. What was the story there?
Yeah, back, it was, in fact, on my website, if you click on photos, it was December 1993 or 94. And back then, Walter Payton owned a couple restaurants in Schaumburg. He owned Studebaker, or he was a partner in Studebaker's, Walter Payton 34s, and I think one other restaurant. And I was able to meet Walter Payton at Walter Payton 34, just off the highway there in Schaumburg.
Mm-hmm.
And he could not have been nicer. Signed a couple of autographs for me, myself and my brother, and just was so engaging and so happy. Yeah. And in fact, over the years, I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Walter Payton.
I met him one time. He couldn't have been cooler. I mean, his name was Sweetness for a reason. That, you know what I mean? And man, was he talented. Was he amazing to watch? I mean, it single-handedly kept people watching the Bears for many years. Like, he was the only reason. He was the bunch of, like, the Avellini years. There was a, you know, oh, he was boy. The, yeah. That was like, you know, Walter was the reason to watch the Bears, and he couldn't have been a nicer guy. Like, you know, I know he's got a great reputation, and he was considered to be a really lovely man, and that's absolutely true from everybody that I know who's ever met him, and me personally having met him.
I'm just thinking, we're talking about him. He passed away 20 years ago in 1999. His son, Jarrett, and I share the same exact birthday the same year.
Oh, is that right?
We're the same exact age.
Jarrett's a great guy, man.
Yeah.
He's a great. His daughter's great, too.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a couple of texts that are coming in. By the way, if you guys want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. If you've got some sports memorabilia and you're wondering about it, Michael Osaki is here. Baseballintheattic.com is his website. And if you have a jock strap that you need to be appraised...
I wear gloves.
Yeah, exactly. Tom, does it surprise you that McMurray has a jock strap signed by Jim McMahon? Does that surprise you in the least?
Well, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I got the text in. I saw the text that said jock strap, and I was like, this guy's pulling my leg. And then Pete texted me personally. He's like, hey, by the way, that's me. It's legit. I would love to know the story behind that. I would love to know, but he's that kind of guy.
Yeah, of course.
Wow.
All right. Let's see. 404 area code says 1933 Gowdy, all four Babe Ruth and two Lou Gehrig, never graded, only some slight bends and damage of the corners.
I love that set. This is why I come to your show, to hear someone like that calls in. Okay, the 33 Gowdy set is one of the top three collecting sets in the entire universe.
So this has got to be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, there's 240 cards in the set. It's littered with Hall of Famers.
Gowdy's the company that put out the card.
Correct. And, yeah. And Gowdy was based in Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yes, there's four Babe Ruth cards.
I'm sure they were thrilled about Babe Ruth.
Right, exactly. There's four Babe Ruth cards, two Lou Gehrig cards in the set. Let me tell you just a quick little story here about the 33 Gowdy set. In the fall of 33... kids everywhere got together, and they were comparing, you know, their cards. Nobody had this one specific card, Nap Lajoie, and they would ask their parents, you know, where is this card? Please help us find it.
Mm.
Long story short, it was a sales and marketing ploy. Gowdy Gum Company purposely omitted one card because they knew the kids would go back to the five and dime store in search of the one card and spend more and more money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That happened in 33.
That is really sneaky.
But back to the caller's question, please email me the photos because these cards are very valuable and it would be disingenuous to just blurt out, you know, numbers without seeing the exact condition. But congrats, that set. I love that set.
Okay. Never graded, but only slight bends and damage of corners. But take pictures.
Yeah.
Take pictures. 404 area code with your 1933 Gowdy cards. Take pictures and you can contact... Michael at info@baseballintheattic.com. info@baseballintheattic.com. Get those pictures taken. He can give you a much more accurate appraisal in that regard. Martha in Evanston says, I have an official World Series baseball from the strike year in the 90s when there was no World Series.
1994 and the White Sox were supposed to go far that year.
Yeah, that was 1994, no World Series. Is it worth anything? That's an interesting thing right there, a World Series baseball in the year that there was no World Series.
So yes, that was a Phantom World Series because it never happened.
Right.
But the ball in the is about $15 to $20.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the Sox were on a tear that year too.
Yep.
They were on a tear that year.
Yep.
Just I can't believe there was. I can't believe that there was no World Series one year. That there was actually no World Series.
Well, some people today actually. Tell me that was the day that they stopped collecting or they stopped watching baseball.
Oh yeah, no, they lost a lot. They lost a lot of fans. Lost a lot of fans after the '94 season. There's no question about it. And You know, and then, you know, there's lots of people who think they started juicing the ball after that. Oh. And then the Maguire-Sosa thing happened, and that brought people back after not watching baseball for a good 2-3 years. And then the baseball home run derby in 1998 brought a lot of people back. So, yeah. I don't know.
All right.
Why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back. We've got some people on the line, and we'll wrap it up here with Michael. Michael Osaki is with us, and he is at baseballintheattic.com. You can also call him if you have stuff that you want to be appraised, and you can call him after the show. It's 312-379-9090, 312-379-9090. All right, we'll be back with more after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. And we are here until 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features will be happening. And, yeah, so that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Michael Osaki is my guest. He is a vintage baseball card sports memorabilia expert and appraiser. Baseballintheattic.com is the website. And we've got a few more people here who have a question. Here's great. Paula on WGN. Go ahead, Paula.
Hey. My mother died a few years ago, and we were going through pictures, and my great-aunt saw this picture, and she said, I remember this day. He was a White Sox pitcher. He came to the neighborhood on the south side, and the steel mills had just released the soot into the air, and my dress got ruined, but all us kids were so excited. I looked him up. His name was Bob Kajawa. And I guess Nellie Fox stepped on his foot, and he ended up getting traded to the Yankees, where he ended up winning 3 World Series rings as a left-handed pitcher, with the only guy to have 3 game seven saves in baseball history. I found him on the internet, and I wrote him a letter at 92 years old. He was in the service in World War II with my uncle. And I thanked him for his service, and I told him the story, and I asked him if he would sign these pictures, which are about from 1949. And he did, and he sent them all back to me.
Wow.
And I just read that he died 2 years ago. He was from Michigan, and he was in the Polish Baseball Hall of Fame now. And, yeah, he was just visiting my uncle on the south side. It's really cool. It's like our gang pictures, you know.
That's great. That's a great story.
Yeah. So I'm not really sure what to do with all that. I have the letter, and I have the pictures, and I have my great aunt's story documented. And
Nick, that's definitely a great story, and that's actually one of the big reasons why I got started in this business. Yes, things have value, but I'm really into the history and the stories behind everything. Yes, but Bob was a southpaw. He was a lefty. He was a journeyman, but then he found some traction in the Yankees. His signature, assuming that these are type 1 photos, so a type 1 photo would be an original photo.
Yeah, they're like from about 49, I think.
Okay. Each one could be $25 to $30.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's more the history.
I mean, it's a great story. It's a really, really great story, Paula. It's fantastic.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okay, have a great morning.
Thanks, Paula, for sharing.
Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey there. Hey, back in 1993, when Joe Montana was playing for the Chiefs, a local radio station got the town of Ismay, Montana, which only had 22 residents, to agree to change their name to Joe Montana. And I just have a white envelope with a stamp that's first day cancellation of the town being Joe Montana.
Well, that's definitely different.
Yeah.
I don't see that. I don't know if I've ever seen that. But off the top of my head, I would say at auction you could probably get $200 or $250.
Yeah, that's a weird story. That's a weird story, Doc.
Yeah, very, very different.
Yeah, because I don't know how long they changed the name, but they had to get all the residents to agree to it.
All 22 people had to agree.
Yeah.
Usually in things like this, the name change.
In Chiefs gear.
Yeah, it was probably just for the day as far as the name change goes. That's usually how it works.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Doc. Thanks, man. All right, take care.
Some great calls today.
I don't even understand what's going on. Again, that doesn't surprise me that our good friend Doc has that. Here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Hi, Nick. Hi, Mike.
Do you remember the Letterman's jackets when we were kids?
Sure.
With, like, vinyl sleeves?
Sure.
I was probably about 10 years old, and I went to a signing, Bobby Hull, Fergie Jenkins, Brian Piccolo, and they signed the sleeve. And the only signature that is legible anymore is Piccolo.
Well, that's great, because that's the big one. That's the one you want. Bobby Hull signs a lot. In fact, he signed last weekend, and I actually bumped into him at the Embassy Suites, and unfortunately, he's not looking too good these days.
Bobby only signs at those kind of events, but he's at every Hawks game, and he signs at every Hawks game. Like, he's in the box, and people can see him, and they pass things up to him. He signs at every Hawks game. I'm not kidding. Yeah. Like, dozens of signatures at every single Hawks game. Crazy. He's that accommodating. He's a great guy.
Yeah. But the Brian Piccolo is really important. I mean, a Brian Piccolo signature is on this jacket about $500.
Yeah. All right, John.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right,
I'll give you a call, Mike.
All right.
Thanks,
there you
John.
Go. Yep. So then you can check. You can also contact via email info@baseballintheattic.com if you couldn't get through this morning and there's some stuff that you want to praise. And also, you always, you know, it's better for you to see it. So pictures always help out.
Absolutely. I'm in the business of seeing things, and pictures are always great because someone can tell me that I have this, but then I can look at it and say, oh, I see a crease, or I see paper loss, or I see something else, or this signature is not real.
Yeah. Okay. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
All right, go ahead.
I got 45, the record. It's called Teamwork that Ernie Banks did, and I got that back in 81 when he did a signing at Jefferson Square Mall. I was working at the mall, and I asked if I could have it, and the manager gave it to me. It says, Tom Ernie Banks, and he said Ernie Banks signed it.
And by the way, we've played that song many, many times on the show when Rick Geezer has come in. When we do sports songs, we've played that song many, many times, and we'll play it again a little bit later on.
Banks was another gracious signer, loved being at the ballpark, just loved being around people. He found his happy spot when he was around people, talking to people. That signature on the item is about $150.
There you go. All right, Steve.
All right, Sonny, it's signed on the sleeve.
Yeah, so it's about $150, Steve. We got a bad connection. All right. Before you get out of here, you did you write for Parade, and you wrote about the true origins of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Tell me a little bit about that.
Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Yeah, wow, over 100 years ago. So it's interesting. These two boys, I was going to say men, but they're actually boys. They were riding the subway out in New York City. And they had never actually been to a baseball game, and they started writing about being at a baseball game or being inside of a baseball game. And that's kind of how it got started back then. And in fact, one of the young boys didn't step foot into a baseball stadium until I think 30 or 32 years after he wrote the song. So quite interesting. Obviously, today it's always played at pretty much every single ballpark across the country.
Yeah. And you talked a little bit about the Grammy Museum, that they have a Take Me Out to the Ball Game exhibit.
Yeah. So I was in Los Angeles a couple months ago looking at that exhibit, and it's quite fantastic. There's so many interesting and unique things. People think about the Grammys as music, but this baseball exhibit, people donated for a couple years items that they have in their collection. There was a Frank Sinatra jacket that he would wear to every baseball game that he attended, and that was donated by his granddaughter. There's a couple of World Series rings in there, some signatures, a lot of music/baseball-related memorabilia. It's all intertwined.
And it runs through October? So if people are in L.A.?
It runs through October in L.A., and then next year it's going to be on the road traveling. And they haven't yet told people where they're going to be. But I think soon, at the end of August or September, they're going to announce the travel dates for next year.
Well, I mean, Chicago's a major city, so you would think that they would bring it here. Yeah. Okay. All right, cool. For people who couldn't get a hold of you during this visit, info@baseballintheattic.com or 312-379-9090. All right, Michael, always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Nick.
And have fun on National Baseball Card Day.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. All right, we'll take a break, and we will come back with the news right after this. Talking about the 80s, so you may as well bust out the Fix. I love the Fix. Seen them like 8 times. Love that band.
I don't know if you saw what Jim Ryan was posting on Facebook, but there was that 80s concert at the Aragon.
Yeah,
with
it was Flock of Seagulls and Wang Chung. Wang Chung, one of my favorite bands.
Apparently they were literally giving away tickets.
Were they?
Because that many people went.
Yeah.
Which I feel bad. I love Wang Chung.
So I love Wang Chung. I like Flock of Seagulls too, but I love Wang Chung. I love Wang Chung. Their 1986 album Mosaic is one of my favorite albums. Like truly one of my favorite albums. But yeah, and that song, by the way, is from the great Walter Hill classic Streets of Fire, which is a tremendous movie. So the 80s, we ate a lot of weird stuff, had some weird snacks in the 80s. It's hard to believe that the 80s happened such a long time ago, but the 80s babies are in their 30s right now, and that means that it's been a long time since we've come face-to-face with some of our favorite, now discontinued, childhood snacks. And here are some of the 80s snacks that weren't popular, but they have now disappeared. So these are, like, specific. You guys remember eating weird stuff back in the day? 312-981-7200, snack food items from maybe, you know, not just specifically the 80s, but that's what these items are. But, like, even from earlier days. Like, for instance, Tom, are you aware of space food snacks?
Yeah, that was kind of a bit of a resurgence in the 2000s, like the freeze-dried stuff.
Or... It's space food sticks.
Okay.
Space food sticks. They came in vanilla and chocolate and I think a couple of other flavors.
Okay.
And they were shaped, just for reference, they weren't meat. They were they were shaped like a Slim Jim.
Okay.
So it was like a Slim Jim in a silver like packet that you would open up and it would taste these were the snacks that the astronauts would eat. Like it was legitimately like that. This was what these guys would eat.
They
would drink
Tang.
They would drink Tang, and they would eat space food sticks.
Tang.
And I was obsessed with them when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I loved them when I was a kid. but yeah, I don't know. I think you can still get them. There are some weird websites out there that sell like classic old candy and snacks and stuff that specialize in the hard to find stuff that nostalgic candy that everybody loves. And the space food sticks are one of them. Food sticks.
You can order them.
And they taste, they're very chalky.
As one might imagine.
And they taste a little weird, but I loved them when I was a kid. I know a lot of people that they were disgusting, but I loved them. How about Care Bear waffles?
Great.
A waffle makes for an excellent snack, especially if you go all out with the butter and the syrup, but these actually look horrific. This 80s product took a normal waffle and made it to fit as for a Care Bear. The 1985 commercial, which features people wearing unconvincing, downright frightening Care Bear costumes, promised that there's a bear hug in every bite. The writer says the Care Bears are great, but so are standard waffles. It's like the company took something good and made it less nutritious and slightly horrifying. I have not seen this commercial, but I would love to go back and watch it just simply for the really terrifying and weird Care Bear costumes. I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but the Care Bears were massive. Care Bears were massive in the 80s. How about this? Bacon Cheddar Cheetos. Bacon Cheddar Cheetos were available for a limited time in the early 80s. There is also a 1983 commercial that's about on the internet. Think about it. It's taken McDonald's years to put cheese and bacon on their French fries, but there was such a flavor concoction in the 80s. Cheetos have a distinct taste, and adding mock bacon to it is almost an insult to Chester himself. To their benefit, they at least are not hot bacon cheddar Cheetos. No, not now. KFC is putting Cheetos on a sandwich now, like a cheesy chicken sandwich with actual Cheetos.
I pray for the day that we could just get bacon bacon Cheetos. That'd be that. That's fine. That sounds cool.
Well, what about this? Sizzaline. You don't remember Sizzaline,
do you?
What
the hell is a Sizzaline?
Fake bacon.
Oh, my God.
Sizzaline. S-I-Z-Z-L-E-A-N. Sizzaline. It's not what Sizzaline was. It's not that Sizzaline was fake. It's just that most of the world's population didn't want to snack on healthy bacon. They want regular bacon, grease and all. This product doesn't even look appetizing in the commercial. But I guess if you're a kid who was really pushing to fry up bacon throughout the day, your parents might feel better about purchasing some Sizzaline, which popped during the late 70s and early 80s, and then it was gone, according to culinary lore. I remember Sizzaline. I totally remember it. It was disgusting.
Yeah. Was it not even close to bacon?
Oh, no. Well, nothing's close to it's not bacon. You know what?
I hear that.
There's a big difference between something that's not bacon and something that is bacon, because bacon is so fantastic. Some weird snack items that we remember from the past. That's what we're talking about, specifically the 80s. But if you want to jump in with any, like, some unusual or weird snacks that you used to eat that aren't around anymore, give us a call or give us a text at 312-981-7200. This is the classic one right here. They need to bring these things back. 773 area code says, what about the WWF ice cream sandwich? That was before they had to change their name to WWE. But the WWF ice cream, the ice cream sandwiches, the ice cream bars with the wrestlers on them, those were classic. They were classic. And, you know, there have been a bunch of campaigns to have those return. Like a lot of wrestlers, including CM Punk. I remember CM Punk talking about how many of his promos would include the fact that he would want an ice cream bar. He wanted his own CM Punk WWE ice cream bar. But they were huge. I mean, you know, when wrestling took off in the 80s, you know, with Hulk Hogan and Cyndi Lauper and all that stuff, when WrestleMania, like, really hit in the mid-80s into the late 80s, the ice cream sandwiches were huge. When they did all the crossover things, when they had the animated series, they had a WWF cartoon, the WWF rock albums where everybody's singing songs, and they had the ice cream, too. And people want it back. I know, well, I can't tell you the number of wrestling fans who are like, I want the WWE ice cream bars back. 312 area code says, I thought pizza-flavored combos were a weird snack in the 80s, and yet they're still around. They're very popular. Combos are a very popular snack. The hollowed-out pretzel with the cheese thing shoved in there. And they have different flavored cheese. So you've got your pizza cheese, pizza-flavored combos. I enjoy combos. I like them. I like them. They might not be, you know, the healthiest snack, but none of these snacks are going to be healthy. Here is Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick. I had the radio off and when you first started talking about this, and I called in and Tom was laughing. I loved Sizzaline.
Why?
It tasted good. It wasn't greasy. When you made it, it was flat, so you could, you know,
yeah,
crisscross your bacon on your BLTs, right, and not have, you know, wrinkled up bacon. And then there was also Steak-ums.
Oh, no, Steak-ums are still around. Steak-ums are still around. I love Steak-ums. I am pro Steak-um. Tom, are you familiar with Steak-ums?
I am familiar with Steak-ums.
I love Steak-ums.
I think you can still get Steak-ums.
Oh, no, you can. Okay. They're in the frozen section of your Jewels. They are I am a proponent of Steak-ums, Rich. I love them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great, but yeah. Sizzaline was good. And like I was telling Tom, I said, you know, the world is going crazy cuz Taco Bell is selling french fries, Burger King is selling tacos, and now they want to legalize marijuana.
Right. Well, sure, you can see the reason why.
Yeah.
This is after marijuana has been legalized. That's why we're seeing all of this crazy food, because, you know, everybody's getting high. So,
right.
All right, Rich. Yeah. Thanks, Rich.
All right. Yep. Have a good evening.
By the way, let me just say this. The Burger King taco is awesome.
Really?
Let me explain why. Now, unless they've changed it, because it looks different in the commercial, because they're now advertising it. But they used to have tacos at Burger King.
Mm-hmm.
And they were almost exactly like Jack in the Box tacos.
Yes.
Now, see, you know what I'm talking about, Vic.
Vic is chiming in.
Yes.
On the Burger King taco.
He is setting you straight. The BK tacos were the real deal.
They were great, but the Jack in the Box tacos,
yep,
that was the deal. We don't have Jack in the Box in Chicago anymore. We used to. There was one right at Addison Western, right across the street from Lane, which is now a Popeyes, but that used to be a Jack in the Box.
I had a Jack in the Box taco last time I was out in California.
Oh, you have
not
to.
Too long ago.
Like, yeah. If I ever go out to the West Coast, I immediately get a Jack in the Box taco.
It was so
it's the best.
Greasy.
It's so greasy.
It's just...
It's deep fried, okay? Yeah. They take the taco. It's got crazy meat in there. They seal it up. They deep fry it. The edges are completely crispy, and yet there's this pillow of grease right in the middle. They're damp. And they're awesome. They're the best tacos, I'm telling you.
You know, when I go out to get a taco, the adjective I'm looking for is damp.
Damp. I'm telling you. Vic, you can say, hey, man, am I singing the praise? Am I not singing enough praises? Jack in the Box tacos were the greatest tacos of all time.
And I remembered when I was eating it, this is why they're so good.
Exactly.
You're looking at the paper package it came in, and there's a pool of grease
exactly,
at the box.
Exactly,
but I don't know. It's delicious.
And
every now and then.
Burger King had tacos, and I used to go in and eat the tacos right across the street from that damn movie theater right on Western by the Kennedy.
Yeah, is that the Regal?
Yeah, the Regal, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is River North, City North, City North,
City North? Yeah,
okay.
That's it.
There's a Burger King across the street from there, and I used to get the Burger King tacos because they were very, 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 very close to the Jack in the Box taco. Now I have not tried the latest incarnation of the Burger King taco, but they don't look in the commercial when they show the commercial for the Jack in the Box for the Burger King taco. They don't look like the old Burger King tacos, which were replicating the greatest tacos of all time, which would be Jack in the Box.
Yep, they don't. It's like the McDonald's, the cherry pies when they used to deep fry them, and then they said they're bringing the cherry pies back, and you're like, you see the commercial, you're like, that doesn't look unhealthy.
No, exactly. But I'm telling you, man, if you go out to the West Coast, you go to California, do yourself a favor and immediately, as soon as you get off the plane, go to Jack in the Box and get yourself some Jack in the Box tacos. I'm telling you, greasy, awesome, fantastic. And you will be, it'll be a pool of grease all over the place. It's just the best.
Good old days.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm looking very much forward to it.
You have to. I want to try the new Burger King tacos. But if they're not like the Jack in the Box tacos, I don't care.
Well, I already have to. I'll add it to the list. I already have to go and reevaluate Arby's. I promise you that.
Arby's is the greatest.
Okay, yeah. I got to see what you're seeing. Okay. I got to taste what you're
all
tasting.
Right. Hey, remember the Hostess pudding pies? It's like the Hostess, you know, you remember, Vic, you remember like the Hostess apple pies and stuff?
Sure.
And then when they were like filled with fruit. And then sometime later, they just kind of put in half the fruit, and you'd bite into it, and air would escape.
Right.
Well, they used to have in the '80s. They used to have pudding pies. So instead of fruit,
sure.
they were loaded with chocolate pudding and vanilla pudding. They were unbelievable. I mean, the calories. I mean, had to
and
be.
You know, when we used to eat that, though, we could eat whatever we wanted because how old were we?
Well, we were kids.
Can you imagine eating two of those now? We'd gain 3 pounds while we're eating it.
Exactly. All right. Okay, we got to take a break here. We're talking about weird snacks from the 80s that aren't around anymore. And of course, the greatest Jack in the Box tacos are the greatest things ever. Well, Kaja Goo Goo for your Friday morning. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are going to start after the 3:30 news with Vic's Picks. And we've got Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday. And it's Mirai Corn Day. So excited. Twin Garden Farms, the folks at Twin Garden Farms are going to be here bringing out those green mesh bags with the ears of fantastic Mirai sweet corn. Oh, it's good. We are talking about weird snacks from the 80s that we used to eat and love and are no longer around. And we got on the subject of the Jack in the Box taco, which is the great, greasy, deep-fried, luscious taco that we can't get in the city anymore because we don't have Jack in the Box. But there was a suitable replacement Burger King was selling that tasted like Jack in the Box tacos, and they were great. But now they've got sort of this new ad campaign about their tacos. Here's Chris on WGN. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Nick. What's going on, man?
Hey.
You know what? I tried it just a couple days ago, and oh my God, is it nasty!
Now, have you had the Have you ever had a Jack in the Box taco?
I did not.
Okay. Have you ever had an old Burger King taco?
An old Burger King? No, I didn't.
Okay.
I had their new one.
All right.
Where it's
so
kind of like deep fried and
It's deep fried, right? Is it kind of greasy?
Oh, it's greasy, yeah.
Is it crunchy around the edge, but it's kind of greasy in the middle?
No, it's kind of got like a meat paste in the middle.
Okay, you know what, Chris? That sounds exactly like a Jack-in-the-Box taco to me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and they're the greatest. So I can't.
Really?
I can't. They're the greatest. The Jack-in-the-Box taco. Vic and I have had many, many Jack-in-the-Box tacos, and what you're describing sounds like the Burger King taco that they used to have, which replicates the Jack-in-the-Box taco. I love them. So.
And that makes it a good taco.
It's not really a taco, but it's food, and it's really good. So you can't get a real taco at a fast food place. If you go to Taco Bell, that's not Mexican food. I don't know what it is. It's good, but Taco Bell is not Mexican food. So all right, Chris, thanks, man.
You know what? '80s things that I used to like.
What
was bottle caps?
Oh,
and
sure.
Wacky wafers.
Those are still around. Bottle caps are still around. Yeah.
I haven't seen them in years.
Yeah, they're still around. I'm telling you. You can go online. You can order these things. I'm telling you. All right, Chris, thanks.
Great show, man.
Okay, thank you, buddy. All right, here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Yeah, no, they're exactly the same as they always were. It's just that on the commercial, they're like fluffed up to look a lot more appealing. The same way a Whopper on a TV commercial doesn't look like a Whopper.
Okay,
that you
so it is exactly like the old Burger King tacos.
It's exactly like the old Burger King taco, which is exactly or pretty close to Jack in the Box.
Oh, man.
It's just the way it looks on the commercial.
Okay, they just made it look better on the commercial.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, John. Thanks for the news,
thanks,
buddy. I appreciate it.
And the funny thing is that we got upset that it didn't look. Ah, that's not the
same. I know.
Same.
When I watched it, I was like, "That's not a Burger King taco. I don't want to eat that. That looks too good. I want the Burger King taco that replicates the Jack in the Box taco, which is the greatest fast food Jack taco of all time."
I love how the previous caller said had like a meat taste in the middle.
And as soon as he said that, Vic, I went, yeah, that's exactly the Jack in the Box taco.
So you're saying these are back? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. At Burger King, you can get the replicated Jack in the Box taco that we all miss.
Okay, I'll see you guys later.
And it's a buck. It's a buck a taco.
Perfect.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. That makes me happy.
You know, the weekend is my cheat time, so
get yourself a couple of Burger King / Jack in the Box tacos.
It's funny too because you enjoy it while you're in, and immediately afterwards you regret it.
But it's so funny because I'll tell you something, Vic. You know what you and I are bonding on here, and what we're talking about. The people who have never had a Jack in the Box taco don't know what we're talking about.
I know.
And for people who have had an old-school Jack-in-the-Box taco or, like, these new BK tacos, they know. They know the genius of it.
Right. It's brilliant that Burger King knows that know.
Oh, man. Just the best. All right. Does anybody remember Fat Frog? It's a good humor product that, sure, it's just ice cream, but it's shaped like a frog. And I'm not saying that we necessarily wanted to eat all of the things our ice cream was shaped as, but frogs are one of the least appetizing things out there. It's green ice cream with Reese's Pieces eyes that almost look like they're glowing. There's also, by the way, a Facebook page for the appreciation of the Fat Frog ice cream treat. Yet another another snack from the 80s. Here's another one. The Triple Power Push-Ups, introduced in 1986, this three-flavor pop was literally too much to handle. Even though it had quite the life, sometimes too many choices is a bad thing. Not only could this item have served as a weapon if crafted the right way, for those who know push-pops know what I mean when they're easily formed into pointy knives, which is true, but there had to be a dentist waiting just while you were eating it. That's the Triple Power Push Pops. How about the Chef Witch? The Chef Witch. Hungry? And it's not a designated mealtime? Just heat up a Chef Witch. Yes, they advertise these for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but these seemed like an unappetizing, doughy version of a Hot Pocket, but smaller. The only time you'd want to eat one of these things is at 2 p.m. when you really just need to power through until quitting time. Even the packaging seems bland and uninspired. So that's the Chef Witch, a smaller, not as good version of a Hot Pocket. Okay, we got a break, but I'm going to hang on to this. We've got more 80s snacks that we can talk about. We're going to break. We got the news, and then after the news, it is time for Vic's Picks, and our regular Friday features shall begin. And the news is up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Friday. Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. Plus, it's Me Rye Sweet Corn Day. Twin Garden Farms are going to come in and present us with the green mesh bag filled with the ears of fantastic Me Rye Sweet Corn. And that's a reason to celebrate. Okay, our regular features are beginning right now. And we kick it off with Vic's Picks. Vic's Picks, this is with Vic doing a musical journey where he didn't have a lot of musical knowledge, so he decided he was going to fix that and listen to every single album on the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And we check in with him every Friday on his progress, and let's make it official here.
One hundred albums. One Vic Vaughn. It's Vic's Picks on the Nick DiGilio Show.
All right.
That's such a good intro. Tom is the man. He also got all the audio cuts for today.
Ah, all right. Very cool. So where are you at now?
All right. So number 23, John Lennon. The album is called John Lennon, Plastic Ono Band by John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Lennon's solo debut album, so it's a big album. I knew that going into it. It was released late 1970, and from what I read about it, there was a lot. And remember, I had no musical knowledge going into this journey, so I read that during this time, when this particular album came out, there was a lot going on in Lennon's life at this time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so with his wife Yoko Ono as well. And the time they started working on this album, the Beatles had only been broken up for 3 months. Mm-hmm. So that's a big breakup there. Then Lennon and Ono, they were in couples therapy. Well, not couples therapy, but taking therapy as a couple together. And the therapy that they underwent required deep thought into their childhood, as children back in their early life. So, and this is all, they're going through this as they're starting this album. So again, 3 months post Beatles, they'd been in therapy for 5 months, and then July 1970, Lennon loses his visa. He has to go back to England, back to London with Ono and Yoko Ono. So the therapy sessions end, and by September, Plastic Ono Band is in the studio, Abbey Studios in London, working on this album. So I thought that was important to say, because the music that came out of those studio sessions, that was all going on in Lennon's life at the time. But by late October, month later, Phil Spector's mixing it. So it was very quick. It gets released before the end of the year. And I was amazed by this these backstories, because, you know, behind the album, to me, when I look into these bands, it really makes the music so much more meaningful. So But from what I understand, a lot of music critics regard this album as John Lennon's best solo work.
Yeah, most people would say that.
Do you agree with that? I was wondering what you thought about.
Yeah, I mean, I like it very much. I'm not necessarily sure that it's my favorite Lennon solo record.
Yeah.
But
I haven't
again,
listened to any of his other solo ones. So
I'm a Paul guy.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I prefer Paul McCartney.
Is the fan base split kind of between Paul? Okay.
Yeah. And most people are John guys. Uh-huh. You know, most people like John the most. I'm a Paul guy. Dan Shagrew, my old producer, George guy.
Same here.
Yeah. And you're a George guy too. But I'm a Paul guy. I like Paul. I like Paul's solo work more than John Lennon's. But this is a groundbreaking and important record, the one that you're talking about.
Yeah.
A really, really important record, and a very personal one, too.
Yeah, I knew that going in after. I read about it before I even played the first track, which that brings us to the first track. It's called Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And this one just breaks my heart. It's about his parents. His mom and dad both left him, abandoned him. It's a terribly sad song, but I love the song. Tom's got a little bit of it, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I found it just gut-wrenching stuff, man. I mean, if you're just hearing this song come on the radio, which I doubt it gets much airplay on the radio.
No, it did.
It did it? Well,
yeah.
I don't know. If you didn't know the story, you might. But, boy, when you read about his life, that's gut-wrenching stuff.
Yeah,
it's messed up.
No, he did, but he was always John Lennon. Always took what was going on in his life and put it down to music.
Yeah,
even when he was with the Beatles, especially the latter part of the time that he spent with the Beatles. Once he did his solo stuff, and he experimented a lot because of his relationship with Yoko.
Yeah, I'm learning that. She had a huge influence on
she
him.
She did.
Huge.
Some people were not happy about that.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of controversy. But,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from what I gather, much of the planet. At least back then, who had access to a radio, thought pretty highly of John Lennon. But, I mean, he was loved. But according to his therapist, I looked him up, Arthur Yanov, I believe is his name. Lennon was almost completely non-functional from emotional pain when this album came out. That's almost a quote. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like you said, he had a lot going on in his life, but he turns it into music instead of, crumbling, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'll speed this up. We got to get through this. The next song, track two, is amazing. It's called Hold On. It's about himself and Yoko and just kind of a message to hold on. Things, get rough in life. But it actually has an uplifting sound to it. There's one other track on the album, too, that it sounds uplifting. But he's speaking in third person. He addresses John in the song and Yoko as well. And it's a beautiful song. But we got to talk about something. If you've heard this song, what happens at a minute into the song when some dude whispers cookie? What is... Tom, do you have that cut?
Tell yourself just to hold on. Cookie.
What the heck is that?
That's John Lennon.
Is it
experimenting? There was a very, I mean, especially during this time period, the stuff that he did with Yoko, there was just a lot of weird stuff.
Okay.
That was
trippy when I heard that, because I was not expecting that. I didn't see anything about that on anything I had read. So that freaked me out a little bit, but, I had to play that. I had to have Tom find that cut. But, the next song, I Found Out, is the name of the song. It's kind of like about an awakening for Lennon, I guess, where he believed, or the subject of the song, I think it's about him, but the subject of the song is a guy who believes that religion is kind of this underlying operating system or false idol that kind of runs the world.
That's something he was very vocal about, very, very vocal about, and wrote about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even like his most famous song, Imagine.
Is
about imagine there's no religion, all that stuff. He vocalized that quite a lot in his real life and in his music.
Right. And I hadn't heard I Found Out. I'd heard Imagined, obviously, but I hadn't heard this one. But yeah, it's similar. Then track four, Working Class Hero. I mean, even if I've heard this one.
That's one of my favorite Lennon songs
of
all time. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I had heard that one before, and I did like it too. Although, after reading into it, I kind of have a different understanding of it. But it's a highly political song. It just kind of shreds society's class structure, that song. So, but track five, Isolation. Absolutely love this song. It's, again, deeply touching to me when I heard it for the first time earlier today. It opens with a beautiful melody on the piano and some really pretty vocals by Lennon, but it's strong as well at times throughout the song. I mean, it's got a powerful sound to it as well at times during the song, but it's about himself and Yoko, and he gets, again, just so vulnerable in that track. And again, you're listening, or I was listening anyway, and I'm going, he was hugely famous, yet so depressed. And that's always fascinating to me, when you think someone has everything in the world and he was just so depressed still. But, I've read about the drug use and that can end up a major contributor to these types of emotions,
no question
too. The song's called Isolation.
Yeah.
So, but I love the song. Had never heard it. Track seven, Love's Love. It's a beautiful song, I thought. It's another one that's more upbeat as well. But it's a really nice song. Love track seven. Track eight, he goes off in track eight. Well, well, well. Track nine, Look at Me. Tom, you'll like this. I read that Lennon used a guitar picking style that he had learned from Scottish musician Donovan on that track. But
Donovan was a very influential dude to a lot of singer-songwriters in that time period.
Really?
Yeah, Yeah.
So I have to go in and listen to Donovan.
Yeah.
Was he big in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Or really?
Absolutely.
What's the genre?
Folk. kind of folky. His daughter, by the way, became a famous. His daughter became a famous actress. His daughter is Ione Skye, who was in Say Anything. That's Donovan's daughter.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No,
I'll have to check him out more. Track 10, God. Read about some controversy with this one. It's anti-religious.
Yep. to say the least.
Yeah. It theorizes that God is I mean, this is my words. I read about it to kind of understand what critics thought it was about. But I wrote down in my notes that it kind of theorizes that God is this idea that was created by humans, at least in part. That's what I got from it.
But, well, that's exactly what he thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, and he's anti a lot of things in this song. He calls out Buddha, yoga, Elvis, Bob Dylan, who he calls by his real name, Zimmerman, which I didn't know till Tom told me a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And the Beatles as well, which obviously he used to be a part of. So I think Tom's got a cut of this as well.
All right.
Yeah.
Just believe in me.
I love that song.
It's a great song.
I mean, yeah, it's depending on where you stand on that issue, but it's a beautiful song. Closing track, My Mummy's Dead, it's got a creepy feel to it to me. And when I read about it, I listened to before I read, and it looks like a lot of people have that same feeling about it, because it's like a song that would be on a, to me, I wrote down in my notes, kind of a song that you would hear on a horror film, I thought. Then again, I haven't watched very many horror films, but Tom's got a cut of it. Yeah, you can tell the sound is different. The way they did that was he sang into a mic, just him and his guitar, and then they recorded it, and then they played it out back through a speaker and recorded that sound.
Right.
So, but it gives a kind of a weird, creepy sound to it, and then also Lennon, the way he sings it, he's just sort of emotionless, kind of a flat, kind of not very. He doesn't use intonations very much. It's monotone. So. But wow, man, this album blew me away. I think this was probably one of the most enjoyable albums that I spent time with so far. So, really love this album.
Yeah, it's a classic. It really is, and a lot of people consider it to be Lennon's best work as a solo artist.
Yeah, and did he do three or four? Not counting three or four solo albums, not counting the ones with Yoko, because I know he and Yoko,
did a lot of records together.
A lot, yeah.
And most people say that when you put on, the records that he did with Yoko, what you normally do is you'll hear the John song and then you lift the needle up to avoid the next song and then you put it down.
Oh.
To avoid the Yoko stuff.
Wow. I'm going to say it. I think Yoko Ono's great. Really? I think she's a fascinating artist and she gets a bad rap because people blame her for the breakup of the Beatles, which I think is ludicrous.
It's completely ridiculous, but it has nothing to do with me not liking her music.
Fair enough.
Because I can't listen to her stuff. It drives me nuts. But I admire that she's an artist. She did not break up the Beatles. Anybody who says that is an idiot. But she just, that's not my cup, but that's not my scene.
For sure.
Now I have to listen to some of her stuff.
Oh, yeah, you
now.
Didn't.
Hold on. Experimental.
Listen, Vic, if you had difficulty with Captain Beefheart.
No way.
Yeah.
It cannot be more unaccessible than
Beefheart. She's playing music. She's burning her bra. Like, she's.
There's a lot of screaming.
Wow. Yeah.
There was a track on here. That's what I was talking about with Well, Well, Well.
Yeah.
Go listen to Well, Well, Well if you haven't listened to that by John Lennon. He is going off in that song.
Well, it's a little different when Yoko dies.
Because she comes from a world of performance art,
right?
Which is really a very strange place where people are doing things that don't necessarily make a whole lot of sense. It's incredibly abrasive at times and usually very off-putting. That's why I enjoy Yoko, because I listen to a lot of music that does dare to go past the realm of good taste and go into a place that's less commercial.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I don't. Well, my preference is going to be towards John writing these beautiful melodies, doing that sort of thing. But I'm fascinated by
her. The thing is that I defend Yoko. Absolutely. And John Lennon loved her, like really, really loved her. It was a genuinely great relationship for the both of them. They may have gone through some troubles and some drug stuff, but he loved her very much.
That's why I wanted to correct myself. They weren't going through couples therapy. It was a sort of therapy. I think they called it primal therapy.
They did a lot of weird sort of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't go with her like musically. I can't do it, man.
I'm gonna go home and listen to Yoko Ono.
Oh my God!
Swear today, but I do like though a lot of these albums that I've been listening to are from the late '60s, early '70s album. Not all of them, but most of them. And back then, I don't know if they do it nowadays because I'm not really into the music scene now either. But a lot of them used artists that weren't musicians necessarily in the studio, and I like the way it kind of pulls the musician to a different place.
Okay, we got a break here, and then we'll come back. We got one more album to talk about for Vic's Picks. All right, welcome back. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and we are in the middle of Vic's Picks. We got one more album we want to get in here before the news at 4. What's the next one, Vic?
Number 22, The Complete Recordings by Robert Johnson. You guys can explain more about who Robert Johnson is than I can, but Jeannie was helping me with this one. He's part of the 27 Club. Does that mean anything to you? A group of musicians who died at the age of 27?
Yeah. It's unusual because a lot of musicians did die at the age of 27.
Wow, that's weird.
Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Cobain.
Kurt Cobain was 27.
Yeah, Hendrix.
Hendrix was 27,
Wow.
Yeah.
So Robert Johnson, he was murdered at 27. Looking into him a little bit before I listened, there's not a lot that was documented about his life, but that kind of is why I think so many stories came out about him and the mysterious, aura that's around his, life.
You did read about him, right? Did you read about mm-hmm. him, like the whole, he sold his soul to the devil?
Yeah, this is the guy who that story's about. Right, yeah. Right.
The crossroads, baby.
The crossroads, like dirt roads in Mississippi, I guess. And there's a documentary about it on Netflix called Remastered Devil at the Crossroads, which I'm going to watch this weekend.
There's also a really great movie with Ralph Macchio, and I know that sounds weird.
Oh, yes.
called Crossroads. Walter Hill directed it, and it takes that legend.
Is it good?
It's great.
It's very good.
Steve Vai, the great heavy metal guitarist from the 80s, plays the devil's guitarist in it. And it's a really terrific movie.
I'm going to watch
both. Seneca, it's a lot of fun. It just takes that legend and plays with it.
I'm going to watch both those this weekend because I'm not done with Robert Johnson. This weekend, I'm going to get into his music quite a bit more. But this particular album, The Complete Recordings by Robert Johnson, number 22 on the top. And the list is actually top 500 greatest albums. So this is a very important album. As the story goes, he wasn't very good. A musician went away, came back, and he's like a master. This compilation album, so the songs were all recorded between 1936 and 1937. Wasn't released till 1990 as this compilation, but 20 songs on side A, 21 on B. It's about an hour and 45 minutes long, and Tom's got a little taste of the general sound. I wanted to kind of let the listeners see kind of what it is.
For me, I got a kind-hearted woman. Anything is worth for me.
Yeah, kind-hearted woman. I mean, and that was 1936 when he recorded that. He was killed 2 years after that recording. But that's the first song on side A, Kind-Hearted Woman Blues. It's one of these great albums that, and you can hear it. It just kind of takes me back to that bygone era. And the Great Depression was still gripping the nation for another few years after he recorded that. And, at the time of these recordings. So, and also, album cover art for this compilation is great. It's a photograph of him. He's holding his guitar on his lap. up, and he's wearing this great suit and a hat that just captures the time period. The hat's tilted, you know, to his right side. Big smile on his face. But, I wanted to get a little cut of track four, too, because I think this is a song that most people would recognize. Yeah. Tom?
California, my sweet home, Chicago.
Blues standard. I knew that one. I'd heard that one
well,
before.
Well, you know, this is one of the guys that invented the genre.
Yeah.
One of the preeminent blues man.
Yeah. A lot of musicians that I just reading about him and said,
oh, yeah,
this guy is a big influence on me.
No question about
it. I don't
it.
Think I would be out of line in saying probably one of, if not the most important American musician to have ever lived.
Yeah. Wow. There's no question about it. There's absolutely no question about it.
Like the first song I played bumping in was Traveling Riverside Blues by Led Zeppelin, and Led Zeppelin cribbed everything from Robert Johnson in terms
of other old blues guys. And they did get their money though. They did get a little. They got some reparations.
Well, that's good. And when you played that bump, I knew it wasn't Robert Johnson, but it sounded like Robert Johnson, so that makes sense.
Zeppelin ripped off all the best.
Great artist steal, baby.
Yeah, they ripped off all the old blues guys. So, but yeah, Robert Johnson, one of the as Tom said, it's one of the most important one of the most important artists of all time.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. All right. That's great, Vic, and you continue
to do this, and we'll do it
again next week.
Here's dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh, no, you big dummy.
You dummy.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 5 a.m. At 4:30, we'll have the Twin Garden Farms folks in, and it's Me Rye Sweet Corn Day. So we got that. But right now, it's time for You Big Dummy. This is where I read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. After I do the recap, first person through at 312-981-7200 will cast the third vote. Let's get going. Dummy number one. A Louisiana woman reportedly told police she did not know where the meth, which was found in her vagina, came from. Ashley Beth Rowland, 23, was accused on July 31st of stealing thousands of dollars from the home of a man she'd been staying with, according to documents in the sheriff's office. The man told West Monroe police that Rowland had swiped the cash and left while he was in the shower. She reportedly confirmed that she took the money and left. According to the documents, a female correctional officer later searched Rowland and found, hidden inside her vagina, $6,233 in cash and about 1 gram of meth. Rowland denied that the meth was hers. She was arrested and charged with theft and narcotics possession.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period.
Dummy number two. A California woman whose Instagram page is filled with photos chronicling her world journeys was arrested this week for the unglamorous crime of stealing a Juul vaping device from a Florida gas station, a heist which was first sought to flee in a Lyft car and then an Uber van. According to investigators, Kate LaMoth, 23, asked to purchase the Juul device around 11 p.m. on Tuesday at an Exxon. She was staying in a home about 3 miles from the gas station. LaMoth, who arrived in the Exxon in a Lyft car, allegedly took $42.79, the device, from a clerk and bolted from the convenience store. When she attempted to flee in her Lyft, the driver declined the opportunity to be the wheelman. Undeterred, she called for an Uber and began walking away from the Exxon. When cops arrived, they found LaMoth inside an Uber van in a parking lot adjacent to the gas station. She reportedly confessed and was charged with retail theft, a misdemeanor, and was booked in a county jail. Her mugshot could not pass muster on her carefully curated Instagram account, which includes photos of her beach, ski, and European vacations and a private jet trip to Las Vegas. In addition to an assortment of contemplative poses, her page, which was made private, also advises visitors to, quote, be humble, it looks good on you. Dummy number two, three. Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Since you've probably, since you'd probably have to be couch locked to sit through a 3 hour long superhero movie, Marvel fans having stoners among their ranks checks out. Applying to buy weed from an online dispensary might not be the best time to let your nerd flag fly, though. Just ask the Canadian who tried to buy using an ID of the entirely fictional Thor Odinson. The Alberta ID features the instantly recognizable face of Chris Hemsworth in the superhero garb. He lives at 69... He lives at 69 Big Hammer Lane, and his weight is curiously listed at around 150 pounds. To make the whole thing a tiny bit more ridiculous, the dispensary couldn't have accepted the ID even if they bought the ruse. A quick scan reveals that the identification is 2 years out of date. Even if it didn't get this desperate Canadian the drugs they desired, Twitter has had a good laugh over it.
La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. Just Donna and me. And the dummy makes three.
Dummy number four, dummy number four, dummy number four. A Cleveland bank robber gave a little too much away when asking a teller for cash recently, and now police are using that information. According to Fox 8 News, it was just after 11 a.m. on Monday that a man walked up to the counter at a U.S. bank branch and passed a note demanding money. When the teller took the note and looked at it and looked on the other side, she saw his name. He had used a note that he had used earlier at the BMV, and it had his name on it, said Special Agent Vicki Anderson of the FBI. Authorities say the 54-year-old Michael Harrell was robbing the bank. He actually wrote the holdup note on the back of a document from the Ohio Bureau of Motor Vehicles, complete with his name and address. Investigators said that the teller was stunned. She actually referred to him as Michael, gave him the money, and called him Michael, and then notified law enforcement. Once authorities confirmed that Harrell was the same man caught in surveillance cameras robbing the bank, a warrant was issued for his arrest. The FBI said that this is not the first time that a bank robber has left an incriminating piece of evidence on the scene, but in each case, it makes the job finding the suspect a lot easier. We've had individuals drop things on the way out the door that they didn't intend to, obviously. We've had individuals drop cell phones, which has identifying information on it. A lot of times, there are pictures, and we have no idea who the person is. But this helps law enforcement tremendously.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy.
Dummy number five. Dummy number five. Two people, including one who was covered in mud, were arrested in connection with a burglary in Kansas after leading police on a huge search. Eric Fernandez, 30, and Chelsea Ray, 25, both from Topeka, are facing burglary, trespassing, and felony obstruction charges over the incident on Friday night. The Kansas Highway Patrol said the Jackson County Sheriff's Office posted images of Fernandez, who was covered from head to toe in mud as he tried to hide in a creek to avoid escape and was eventually captured on Saturday afternoon. Eric Fernandez, 30, is pictured in mud here. And he was wanted by the police for suspected burglary. Members of the sheriff's office, the highway patrol, canines, and aircraft assisted in the search for the two subjects, for suspects. Jackson County Sheriff Tim Morris claimed that the pair is suspected of taking property from a home south of the Mayetta Friday night, and neighbors later approached them and made their getaway in an SUV, and then became stuck in a private residence. They're facing burglary, trespassing, and felony obstruction charges after the incident.
I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber.
All right. It is time to vote. Let me do the recap. First person through at 312-981-7200 is going to be our third vote. We've got the dummy who had meth in her vagina and said it wasn't hers. We have the dummy who made a getaway in a Lyft and then in an Uber van. We have a dummy who tried to buy weed with a fake idea that had Thor on it. We had the dummy who handed a bank teller a note with his name and address on it, and the dummy thief who got busted covered in mud after hiding in a creek. Those are our five choices for dummies. So let's get a vote here. Let's start with let's start with Tom. Tom, where are you going on this vote?
It's kind of a tough one. Pretty good dummies here, but I'm going to say The guy who tried to buy weed with a Thor ID. Not only was it a fictional ID, it was expired.
Right.
Come on, man. Like, how high do you have to
expired. Be? Expired. 69 Big Hammer Lane.
Yeah. That's my vote.
Okay, you know what? That's my vote, too. And also, the ID is pictured in the story.
Yeah.
And the ID itself is just, it's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah,
so,
it's Chris Hemsworth looking real goofy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's the winner, but we want Mark to vote. Here's our listener. Mark, which dummy would you vote for?
I got to go with the bank robbing dummy.
The bank robber with the name and address on the note.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's very, very stupid. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
All right.
That's our dummy of the week. We'll do it again next week. We got a break here for some weather, and when we come back, it's time for Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, right here on 720 WGN. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context.
Context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right. It's Straight Out of Context, everybody. One of our Friday features. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it makes you giggle and sounds a little dirty, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Now, we haven't done this in a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
but we're back. Straight Out of Context. What do we got?
All right. First off, of course, it's the queen of Straight Out of Context, Wendy Snyder, caught here by Fox Valley Mike.
So it looked like rare roast beef.
Oh, man. All right.
Next up, Wendy again, this time caught by Deanna. Here it is. One second. Make sure I got the right cut there. Here we go.
I like to play with other people's monkeys.
I can't even imagine what they were talking about.
It was from when they were at the McHenry County Fair.
Oh, okay.
They had monkeys riding dogs.
Oh, right.
So she was hanging out with a monkey friend.
Okay.
Next up, here's Ro Khan, caught by Tom and Bartlett.
And then what do you do with the tip at the end?
Oh, come on, man.
You should know, Ro.
Come on, man. What are we talking about here? All right.
Next up, one of my Sunday morning boys, Dave Schwann, caught by Brian J.
It's real small. Real small.
This small?
It's that small.
The hell? Why are they dragging Andy Griffith into this?
It's from the far-flung forecast that they do every Sunday, and the theme song is the Andy Griffith theme.
Okay, I was going to say, dragging into the Andy Griffith to that filth.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, here's Pete McMurray, caught by Jesse.
I'm trying to get my wife to do it, and she just won't do it. It's like, Sarah, it only takes about 10 minutes, but it's the weirdest experience.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if he's trying to get her to wear that Jim McMahon
jock strap that he has. Okay.
All right, next up, here's Ro again. He's having a good week this week.
Is it harder because it's tighter?
Oh, my God. Who found that one?
It's coming to us from Jeffrey.
Okay.
Next up, here's Dave Ennett, caught by Pat and McHenry.
I just had to swallow hard there.
Yeah.
See, I love it when Dave's on. You know how much I love it when Dave Ennett is featured on Straight Out of Context.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Just makes my day. I just love it when Dave's featured on it. Okay.
All right, next up here's Steve Grzanich, host of the opening bell, caught by Kelly and Elgin.
I only licked the top of it.
Oh, boy. We got to be careful. All right.
Yeah. All right. Ro again. This time caught by Don in Marengo.
I used to play with myself for hours upon hours.
Come on, man. You can't even say that sentence. That's not even out of context. That's in context.
Oh, he said he was talking about playing Pong on his Atari.
You can't say I'm play with myself all day long. You can't say that. All right.
Steve Bertrand here, caught by Len.
You got a little chub going.
Wait a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What the hell?
You got a little chub going.
Wait, what are they talking about? What's the...
They're talking about dad bods.
Oh, okay. All right. Wow,
one
man.
More time for posterity.
Yeah.
You got a little chub going.
God, I can't believe... That's one of the best ones ever. Okay.
All right, making her very first appearance.
Uh-huh.
It is G from the Steve Cochran Show, latest edition.
Welcome.
Yeah, so this was sent in by Jesse.
Oh, I can do, like, party tricks.
Party tricks. Party tricks. Uh-huh. Very nice.
Okay.
All right. Anna DeVlantes hasn't been on in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
This one's coming to us from Joe in Plainfield.
Put their finger in it and just try to, you know, see what it tastes like.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. That one they're talking about, the Illinois State Butter Cow.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
All right, Steve Cochran finally makes it this week, coming to us from Scott in Carpentersville.
What's a girl got to do to get milked?
They were talking about how cows have regional accents.
Oh, okay.
Apparently.
Okay.
According to John DeCoff.
Okay.
All right, just a couple more here. Bill Leff, caught by Debbie.
It's soft, it's squishy, it doesn't feel like it can hurt you, and so I put it on my face.
That's what I do when I don't know whether it's going to hurt me or not. Just put it right on my face.
Yep.
All right.
All right, and then finally, you appear.
Me?
Yeah, you're here.
Come
you're
on.
Round us out this week. Here's Nick D, caught by Fox Valley Mike.
Like, it's right there, and it's about to come out. All right, thanks. Appreciate that. All right, well, keep listening. Keep your ears peeled. And when people get dirty, and it's jot it all down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. How about this?
Ooh, what do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all the fuss? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all the fuss? There ain't nobody
spies
like us.
All right, there it is. Nick D Show Spies. Once again, you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody at any time mentions me or the show, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Okay.
All right. Three quick ones here. First is coming to us from Joel and Gurney. Here's Wendy Snyder.
All right. Nick DiGilio, according to a texter, loved the new Quentin Tarantino movie also. Nick and I have been like on the total same page for things.
Oh, interesting.
We both watched Big Brother.
Yeah.
Which I can't watch on Channel 2. How long is that going to go on?
It's been nearly 2 weeks already, which
July
is too long.
July 20th, I think, is when it went.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable.
I don't like it.
And according to 414, Richard Romper liked it very much as well.
Romper? Richard Romper? Does he have his own room? By the way, the CBS thing, they're back. So
they're back?
She should have CBS back already.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, next up, here's Mary Vandeveld on Steve Cochran Show, caught by Rick.
The old standard alarm clock is not a bad idea. You can also buy the one that's shaped like a baseball, kind of, and it bounces off whatever surface it's on, so you literally have to get out of bed to get it to shut it off.
Okay, listen, I don't have a heart attack in the morning. I just want to get up and make sure that I'm here.
I wake up to Nick DiGilio, and I get out of bed really quick.
Here's an idea.
Because you don't want to be in bed with Nick. I get it. I totally get it.
Why don't you have Nick's producer... give you a wake-up call every day.
Yeah, like a hotel. That would work.
Yeah, really.
Like Tom would love
it. Is that Tom that's doing
really
it now?
Love that?
Doesn't matter if he loves it. This show's got to be on the air. This is vital stuff.
Wow. Tom, did you call Mary this morning?
I did not. Didn't call G. Didn't call anybody.
Okay. All right. Okay, you said there's one more?
Yeah, one more. Right. I'll try to speed this one up.
That's all right.
So this is coming to us from Vic Vaughn, of all people. He caught this last night, actually.
The last movie that I saw... I think was I can't recall. What was the really big movie that
Rocket Man?
Rocket Man.
Rocket Man.
Rocket Man. And then I saw that Bill Murray movie that came out about him, and Adam Driver was in it as well, the zombie movie, and that was probably the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
It was so bad.
It was not, and it's funny because you're like, oh, you know, you maybe you're just being, you know, you're making too much of it, that it wasn't that bad. It was seriously the worst movie I've ever seen, ever. And
I'm glad you feel that way, because I felt the same way, and I didn't want to feel like an alien. There's actually aliens in it.
A very
weird thing.
Very like deconstructed aliens. So like nothing connected. There was no like payoff to that movie. So I'm certain it really made put like a bad taste in my mouth, because I love Bill Murray so much, but seeing him in that kind of movie, I was like, what are you thinking, man? What's going on, Bill? And I know he's a big fan of WGN, so call in, Bill. Let me know what you were thinking.
I mean, he's good in it. He has a little, you know, his part's kind of small but good, right?
He does that. It was like Wes Anderson acting in like a scary movie. Well, it needed more action. I'm sure that Tom Hush and Nick have a lot to say about.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's a great movie.
I liked it.
So that's what I'm saying.
I want to ask what Bill Murray's doing. I don't know. Ask him about the other four Jim Jarmusch movies he was in.
It's a Jim Jarmusch movie, man. It's a Jim Jarmusch zombie movie. I don't know what you were expecting. And that was Michael and...
And Jerry Nunn.
And Jerry Nunn. Okay. All right. Well, keep your ears peeled. That movie's good, by the way. Dead Don't Die is what it's called. They didn't even say the name of the movie. All right. Here's the deal. We got a break here. And then the Twin Garden Farms folks are going to be here, and we're going to bust out some Mirai corn.
Right.
He takes tea at 3, man. That's unacceptable.
If I took my tea at 3, I'd be hit.
That's just unacceptable. That's a nasty habit. It really is. I'm glad he can admit it. That's my favorite Stone song right there. That was one of the albums that we talked about with Vic. Let It Bleed by the Stones.
Love it.
My favorite Stones album, my favorite Stones song. A lot to choose from, though, on there. So, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, and we're awaiting the arrival of the Mirai Sweet Corn, which is on its way. And we're going to talk with some of the folks from the Twin Garden Farms about the Mirai Sweet Corn. It comes in the distinctive green mesh bag. And that's how you can tell that you got the best sweet corn in the world. And it's the great Mirai Sweet Corn. And they bring it to our show every year right around this time. So there we go. So we're just waiting on that. By the way, we'll be back on Monday morning with our regular shows. I had last Monday off, but we're going to get back in here. Steve Procopi and Eric Childress are going to join me, and we're going to talk about all the new movies, and my dad is going to call in and tell a joke. That's all coming up on Monday morning. So, so we'll do that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And, so that's what's happening. And the Mirai Sweet Corn, by the way, will tell you all the places where you can get it. They've got the farmers markets are available that you can check out online. And we'll tell you how to do that. And all that really cool stuff. So that's all coming up right now. And I think they're heading in. Are they coming in right now? Okay. All right. They're coming in with the corn. It's very important. So let's see. Hey, guys. Come on in. There you are. Right. Take this one. Yeah, right there.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent.
Tell everybody who you are.
I'm Gary from Twin Gardens.
Hi, Gary.
One of the zookeepers.
Yeah. So you're... you come in every year.
Yes.
And we always look forward to it. It's a big time for you guys. This is like a big deal.
Yeah, it's total chaos for about 8 weeks.
Yeah. And so what tell everybody about the Mirai Sweet Corn. Thank you, sir.
Well, yeah, it's a hybrid that we developed in the late 90s, and it has all three sweet corn genes in it, one for sweetness and one for tenderness and one for the old-fashioned Grandpa's corn flavor.
Right. And it's there's no other corn like it.
No.
There really isn't. No. And I know that sounds crazy.
It does.
but I remember, the great Orion Samuelson telling me that you will never taste corn like this ever in your life. And he's right.
Yeah, I talked to him last night.
And did you?
Yeah, he was wondering how we were doing with all the rain and everything else.
Yeah, that's a big question. Yeah. It's a good question because we had a ridiculous amount of rain this
week. We've got a really good supply. We got about a 10-day late start, but we're good to go. The quality's fine, and we'll be going to the middle of September.
Okay, so tell us about when you guys start growing the corn. When does that happen? When does it?
Normally, we try to get going about the third week of April, but this year we didn't plant till 11th of May.
Oh, that's late.
Yes, and we have to have like 26, 27 plantings to make sure that it's quality and right on spot for every week.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't plant it all at once. So you have to, so plant it every 6-7 days. But then when it rains for 15 days, what do you do?
It's crazy, right?
Yeah. So it's been, but the one thing good with me, right? It'll hold. It'll hold.
Yeah.
Because we guarantee it for a week after a customer takes it. And,
yeah.
And so it holds nice.
It's an unbelievable taste. Yeah. It really is an unbelievable corn. So tell me about Twin Garden. Tell everybody about Twin Gardens.
Grandpa moved from Des Plaines, Potter and Ballard in 1954. And so it's settled in the Big Prairie up there. And it's just, it's a family farm, third, fourth generation now. And we mainly do sweet corn seed now. We grow a lot of seed. And then we have vegetables and Mirai sweet corn for the farmers markets. Mm-hmm. We're mostly farmers markets and a few grocery stores in the Chicagoland area.
And for people who want to get the mesh bag of the beautiful Mirai sweet corn, which is the best corn ever. They can check out the website to see where the farmers markets are in Chicago.
Right, twingardenfarms.com, and we're actively updating the website all the time, and it's farmers markets, and it has locations, times, and we'd love to have you in Harvard. We've opened up possibilities at Heinen's and Casey's and Sunset Foods, Whitney, some small grocery stores in the area.
In all the years that you've been doing this, this the weather that we had, the rain, have you ever seen anything like that?
Right, and I think Orion's been in this for his whole life, and I have two, and I sort of every year is the worst ever, with a farmer. You never heard of a happy farmer, but just take a look around when you're driving, wherever you're going in this area, there's fields that are not planted. And I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
And so we eventually got every field planted every year. But this year, there's a considerable amount of acres that's not even planted.
Every day except for one day in May, it rained.
Right, right.
Every single day in that month except for one.
Right. The guys in the field did a fantastic job this year.
It had to be really hard.
Yeah, they were on call 24 hours a day, planting in the middle of the night if it just got dry enough to plant. And then we get a rain 2 hours later and trying to match up the seed. The seed, the male and the female seed has to be matched. You plant the female today, the male's got to be planted in 3 days. When it rains for six and you plant the sixth day, they will not nick what they call a nick. The pollen and the silk don't match up, so you don't get seed.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, who would you bring in with you?
I brought Quinn. He's on the tail end of a 2-week visit from Colorado. He's my grandson. And
it's your grandson?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How you doing, man?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome. Welcome. Do you like the corn?
I love it.
Yeah. It's the best.
Had it every day since I've been here.
That's why I tell everybody at the farm when they stop for the roadside market, I said, the only reason I keep this job is I get to take it home every night.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And when did the green mesh, the distinctive green mesh bag, how long has that been around?
Well, since the beginning of Mirai, when we started to do the farmers markets, because when you guys found the corn, or when you saw the article in the Tribune and invited us down, it sort of blew things up a little bit. So,
sure.
So all of a sudden, everybody had the same thing. So we said we had to identify ourselves, and we guarantee it, too. So, in order for us to be able to back it up, and it's from Twin Gardens.
Yeah.
It's the Twin Gardens Mirai.
Yeah. It is I can't even explain to you how great this corn is.
No,
and I know that
we're blessed.
Yep. It sounds crazy.
It does.
When I just keep going on and on about how this corn is so good. I've never tasted anything like it. I remember the very first time that I was hosting and you guys came in with the corn many years ago. Orion, this was when Orion used to come in at 10 to 5. and do his he'd do the business report.
You bet.
We don't do that anymore. But Orion used to come in, and the last 10 minutes of the show, I'd be with Big O, and you guys came in, you brought the corn, and I had never had it before, and Orion said that you could just open up the ear. And bite right into it right now.
No way.
And raw, not cooked, just open it up and bite into it. And I'm like, no. And he's like, go ahead, trust me. And you trust Orion.
Right.
Whenever Orion says something, you listen to it and you believe it.
Absolutely, 100%.
So I ripped it open, I took a bite, and I could not believe it. I could not believe how tasty it was.
And you can see how much fun we have at the roadside market because, you know, a new customer will, you know, you can see and say, just try it raw. Raw. And he says, no way. And then all... The customers just pounce on them. Oh, you got to do this. you don't have to do a thing. You know, you don't have to say a thing.
You know, Tom has never tried.
Tom hasn't?
No.
Whoa.
No, first time. We love guys like Tom.
Yeah. We say, why don't you grab an ear? Did you bring a bag for him? Yeah. Grab an ear and let's have Tom bite into it on the air here for the first time because you got to try it. And it's raw. It's not, it's just straight from the bag. And Tom. We're bringing it in for you. Now it's not been cooked. It came straight from the bag, straight from the farm. Yeah. They just opened it up, and Tom is about to take a bite of the raw, beautiful Mirai sweet corn.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't that unbelievable?
It's like eating fruit.
It's unbelievable. That's exactly the same response that I had when I bit into it for the first time. Raw corn. Yeah, I know. And look at his face. He's losing his mind. So it's the best stuff ever. We appreciate you coming down every year.
We love doing it. It's fun. It's you know, it's a short season. It's like I said, total chaos.
It's going to be a madhouse for a while.
It's a madhouse. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. So just check the website and if you need anything, just call Gary.
TwinGardenFarms.com.
Perfect.
And we always appreciate it. And I know that I every year when I get the corn, and I have a farmer's market within walking distance of my place, and I know it's Independence Park,
and that is this week because it's every other.
Oh,
it's the second and fourth Sunday, so it is this week.
So if you're in my neighborhood and you're in the Independence Park neighborhood, they do have it.
Yep.
They do have the Mirai because
I go see Kevin at Beverly too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There you go. So anyway, Gary, always a pleasure.
Same here.
It was nice to meet you, man. Yeah,
nice to meet you too.
Have a safe trip back. Yeah. And Gary, thank you so much for bringing down the corn.
You're more than welcome. Thanks.
And I know that everybody at the station goes nuts when the corn is here. People lose their minds. Like the office, everybody in the office is like, "Where's the corn? I need the corn. I got to get the corn. Where's the corn?"
Yeah, I feel bad for Kevin.
I bet you do. Yeah, we all do. So anyway, TwinGardenFarms.com for more information where you can get it, all the farmers markets, or you can just go out and to Harvard.
Yeah, we'd love to come to Harvard. Yeah, it's worth a one-time trip. You know, they say, what do you have to do? I says, it's not a tourist attraction. It has a gravel driveway, but we have good corn.
No, you don't have good corn. You have great corn. Okay. It's the best corn. So it's the Twin Garden Farms Mirai Sweet Corn. It is sweet corn time, and it's available now, Mirai Sweet Corn. Gary, again, from Twin Garden, and we thank you guys for coming down and bringing the corn. Hey. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get a little funky for a little while and do a little Fly Jams Friday right after this on WGN.
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly Jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
All right. Yeah. Fly Jams Friday. Yeah, that's it. We do it every Friday. We start your weekend off on a funky note with some R&B and some soul and some rhythm and some awesomeness and some flyness, and it's Fly Jams Friday. And we do it every Friday. Coming up, we've got Steve Gazanich in the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, can we say hello to DJ Luscious Hushus?
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushus, baby.
That's right, man. Wiki, Wiki, Nikki, Viggity, 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 Vic, Verified Double V is running around like a lunatic in the newsroom, as he always is, and Luscious Hushus is here. It's Fly Jams Friday, 312-981-7200. I assume we've had some requests.
Yeah, I got a few requests here.
Okay, now, how about that corn, though?
That is incredible.
Yeah.
That's the sweetest fly jam I've ever tasted, is this corn.
Yeah. I'm very excited. Every year, the place goes nuts when they bring the Mirai, the sweet corn in. Because it's really, it's unlike any corn you'll ever taste.
I feel like I've been shown the promised way.
Yeah. You know,
this is the way to be.
And check out the website to see where, you know, there's certain stores that have it and of course the farmers markets. And it's in the green, the very distinctive green mesh bag. That's how you know it's Mirai sweet corn from Twin Garden Farms. So, all right, let's get our first request for some flyness.
All right, let's open it up here with Change. Change of Heart coming to us from Dino. Let's take a listen.
It's Fly. Yeah, there you go. Some Fly jams right there to kick off your Friday morning. We got plenty of them with Luscious Hushes spinning the discs. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
All right. Next up, this is a real throwback coming to us from Fly Jam John. It's one of the early hits of Motown. It's Barrett Strong with Money.
Great song. Right, that's Fly. That's a great song.
I love it.
Covered many times,
of course.
But
of course.
That's the original, and that's the great one. Hey, I'm noticing Mary's not here. Oh, are they doing a remote?
They are doing a remote
over Channel 9.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's why I always get concerned because Mary's always here exactly at 4:30.
That's true.
And I was looking in the traffic because they have a camera, obviously, in the room where you do the traffic, and there's nobody in there. And I was getting a little concerned, but then I realized, oh yeah, it's the back to school celebration over at Channel 9.
That is true.
So at Bradley Place. They're going to be over at Bradley Place. You guys should swing by.
Yeah, check it out.
Check it out. And it'll be on the morning show will be live out there, too. So it's going to be good. And so Cochran and the whole gang are out there this morning. So that should be fun. Stay tuned. Listen to it right here. Okay, more flyness?
Yes. Next up, coming to us from Mike in Louisville,
our
friend all the way down in Louisville, it's Take Your Time, Do It Right by the SOS Band, a true fly jam.
SOS Band, you know, phenomenal band. Phenomenal.
They just won't quit.
It's
got a bass line that won't quit.
They just, they were always a terrific band, had a lot of great songs, and one of the flyest bands of that time period. No question about it. So, Fly Jams continue right here, and we've got more Fly Jams. All right, Luscious Hushes, what do we got next?
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
That's right.
Next up, coming to us from Ike, the king of the 80s, here's Sybil with Don't Make Me Over.
Ah.
Don't make me over. Now that you know how I adore you. Don't make me over. Oh,
Yeah. Classic. By the way, Dean's picks there are on the TVs right now.
Oh, what we got?
He gave the Dora the Explorer movie a C.
Okay.
And right now, they're showing clips from the kitchen, so I'll see what he gives that one. I wonder if he's going to review the scary stories to tell in the dark.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I hope he does.
Yeah, I'd like to know what he thinks.
Yeah.
Love hearing what he thinks.
So we're seeing C- for the kitchen.
Ooh.
Come on now. Don't say that. You can't give something a C-. You can't give a C- to a movie with Elizabeth Moss.
It's possible.
No! It's
getting
not.
To the Greek had little Elizabeth.
No,
Moss
it did have
like,
it. Didn't it? It
that?
Did. Yeah, and I wouldn't. No,
you
no.
give that a C-.
I probably would. Yeah,
and I love that movie.
Yeah, no, I just don't like the Russell Brand.
That's fair. That's
so,
fair.
Queen with Adam Lambert playing the United Center tonight.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very very cool.
All right.
All right, next up, Jimmy James and the Vagabonds. Now is the time, coming to us from Bernie in Wisconsin. Thanks very much, Bernie.
It's a very distinctive sound right there. You got your little wah-wah pedal going in the background there. Yeah. So
I love that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's one of my favorite guitar pedals, the wah-wah pedal.
The wah-wah is a fun pedal. Yeah.
Very versatile.
You got a nice fun pedal there, the wah-wah. I had a wah-wah when I played guitar. I had a wah-wah pedal and a distortion pedal, too. Those are the only two that I had.
What kind of guitar did you play?
Strat, Fender Strat.
There you go.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah.
Can't be stopped.
Okay. What's next for Fly?
All right. Next, it's Heat Wave with Groove Line coming to us from our good
one of my
pal.
Favorite. Let me just say one,
go for
one
it.
Of my absolute favorite Fly jams of all time. One of my favorite songs ever.
Well, you can thank Lulu for that.
All right,
one.
Lulu.
Thank you, Lulu. Here's Heat Wave.
It's such a great song, man. It is such. It's got such a groove. It's what's called Groove Line. So they,
you can feel the heat.
It's just fantastic. Okay, we got time for one more before we get out of here.
Yeah, let's. You know, we actually ran out of requests here.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, let me see if I could pull one last one up. There's got to be one in here. Okay, let's see if I can get this in time. It's coming to us from the 708.
Okay, we're running out of time.
Oh boy, this is. This is it. This is where we find out if...
I'm enjoying this right now.
Oh, man. This is where we find out if Luscious Hushes has still got it. And he definitely does.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, this intro is like a minute long. Let's just... What was it? What was it? There you go. Billy Ocean. All right.
Don't tell you. I never did anything for you, 708.
That's right. There you go. Billy Ocean. We got to hear the intro, which was nice. All right.
Very cool intro.
All right. Enjoy your corn this weekend, Tom.
Oh, I think I will. Yeah. I'm going to eat the rest of this raw and then find out the many ways I can cook this corn.
It's great. Okay. We will break here, and the opening bell with Steve Grzanich is up next.